And welcome to Dark Guidance. I'm Chris.
And I'm Brian.
And
wait, what the fuck? Where's everybody else?
Yeah, they fucking bailed. I knew it. So look, we're currently experiencing dust storms in Sydney, or more realistically, cat herding nerds. It's super fucking hard when they're already stuck in, eating food, watching television. So
I believe Affy's excuse was there was lack of food.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, he was fucking angry. Hangry, I believe is his term. Anyhow, it's just going to be us two for tonight. So we figured we'd talk about something that doesn't really revolve around factions or... No, actually, it doesn't
revolve
around...
Chris, I just have to establish, do you think we can ride a bicycle? I mean, we've relied on a tricycle for 50 podcasts. At least. There's always been at least three wheels here. Can we maintain a stable two-wheeled mode of transportation?
I don't know. As long as it's not a unicycle, let's be honest, right? The moment this cast becomes a unicycle,
we're fucked.
We're completely fucked.
Okay, we'll see how
we'll
do it.
We'll go with this new brave new bicycle meta. So, speaking of bicycles, or meta, actually, we decided today that because it's just the two of us, we're going to revisit a couple of topics, in part because this is something that we feel hits on every faction to one degree or another. And in part also, it leads into another topic we can discuss between the two of us. And that is, we're going to talk about battle engines and now structures. Again, we did a cast when all of the battle engines got an update, but that was like so long ago that it might as well just be ancient history. And at the time, we didn't have things like the blockhouse existing. So yeah, things have changed quite a fair bit.
Speaking of the blockhouse, why don't we just start in Signar?
Well, I mean, we were, truth be told, listeners, peeling back the veil, we were also thinking of just doing a Signar faction review because we didn't that we didn't
no.
really need any expert advice on a crappy faction like Signar. Justifying haters. All right. One thing first, getting this out of the way, because I think block structures need their own little spiel, because structures are a weird model. I mean, they're very unique. They are actually completely unmovable. There's no immovable models in the game, well, effectively until they exist. And that means a lot of their stats are way worse than you think they are. Like, I mean, we are on the blockhouse. Take the blockhouse, for example. It has a pretty fucking good
well,
one when you think about it.
Let's start with, like, what makes it a structure. And a structure means it's on a 120 mil base.
Yeah.
Doesn't... And deploys with the rest of your army, but deploys 6 inches past your normal deployment. 8 inches past your normal deployment.
So it's a tiny bit beyond your AD line.
But it'll never move from wherever you deploy it.
Yeah.
But it is to the point where in some scenarios, you can technically deploy it in a scenario or contesting a flag.
Typically speaking, if you're planning on using structures, a lot of the time, if you have the luxury, structures work incredibly good in any theme force, which gives you extra deployment range because it gives you more scenarios you can contest with. In a lot of the cases, there is no scenarios you can contest with. Like, I believe the blockhouse suffers from this problem, unless I think you go second. And weirdly, also, blockhouse, like, structures cannot actually score zones. That's quite strange. It does mean that you still got to put something else in there. And then finally, I think this is really bears mentioning. Structures are incredibly bad scenario pieces because they just cannot... They are good and bad. The good parts are all the structures to date have ways of making models. The blockhouse makes trenches. The Menoth Church makes guys. And finally, the...
is it any guys or just exemplar guys?
No, it's basically any. I believe it's small, medium basis. I'll double check when
we get
to there.
Looking from how all of the models that have come out since the blockhouse, I imagine the next time Signar goes into a CAD and gets a new theme for us, and if the blockhouse fits the theme, it's probably going to end up in it, and it's probably going to be able to bring more than just trenchers back.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Just based on the way the rest of this game has gone.
Yeah, like the way that a lot of the other ones have worked. Like maybe the blockhouse becomes like the storm blockout. Like stormtroopers come out. Or like, I mean, you can
and
imagine
even
something as simple as long gunners. You can imagine hanging out in there just like chilling out or whatever. But yeah, like basically every... the blockhouse is probably the best way to start. So there are some real big problems, though, with having structures. As I said, like, scenario is a big problem, unless you have the units alive, in which case you can play a stalling game, but you still need the meat up front to do so, because your structures do not score and cannot move forward.
Yes, they don't score because they're not a battle engine or a jack.
Yeah, it's really weird. Now, the final problem, and this is that all structures are way worse at shooting than their stats appear because they're immobile. If this was a game where you play on a football field, that wouldn't actually be that big a deal. I mean, if you think about times you played 40K, right? Like, any time you play Warhammer 40K, your models might as well be immovable. There are several models like Basilisk, which are on vehicle chassis, that it completely doesn't matter, because they're parking in one zone and they're shooting all game. War Machine is different. It is much more of a car park, but also you as the player are much more able to create terrain, especially smoke. Like, the blockhouse's big problem is that with the first structure, which I think is a common complaint most Signar players have about it, is that it feels dated compared to, like, the Menoth Church, for instance.
Yes. Well, I mean, it was dated the moment it came out.
Yeah.
No one was impressed with the release of the blockhouse. Everyone thought, if this is what structures are going to look like, they're not worth taking. The church turned a lot of people around, but a church still has some flaws that we've spoken about just briefly.
So one big issue with the blockhouse is that I believe, unlike the circle structure, which, by the way, it creates guys. Yeah, that's what I thought. So unlike the church and unlike the circle Well of Orvis, which is still in the CID, but mostly the rules have been confirmed for it, the blockhouse doesn't have either eyeless sight or true sight, and that means that if you have ways to mitigate, like, it basically just gets stuck, like, by clouds. I don't believe the, actually, I'm going to double check on the church, because I believe it also gets screwed by clouds, but you have Roven in faction, so you don't really care. Yeah. Oh, no, it's got true sight. It just ignores clouds, right?
Well, yeah, but that's because it's run by a bunch of, like, god-worshipping priest guys, and the Trencher blockhouse is run by... Well,
dude,
trenches.
Yep.
Which, I mean, means why it doesn't have any mystical magical, but you think they could have gave it some more mundane abilities other than girded. Oh boy.
It does have a good mundane ability though. Like, we've been shitting on this model for a good solid 6 minutes now, but it does have one incredibly good feature, and that's the trench network system it has. Okay, maybe incredibly good's overselling a tiny bit, but the ability to deploy trenches is big.
Okay, so it gives you the ability to deploy trenches in base to base with it.
And with
Then it also has girded, so it's like, here's a trench that gives you immunity to blast damage, but if you stand next to me in base to base, you also get
immunity to blast damage. Yeah.
But you know what would be even better? If it had the rule, I don't remember what it's called, but if you were base to base with it, you get cover.
Yeah.
But can you imagine if you were base to base, you get girded and cover, and then you're in a trench, which gives you girded and cover. Okay.
Yeah. You get double cover, but which is currently not a thing.
It's cute, but it just feels like it's not quite. Its gun is also neat at rat 6, range 15, AoE 4,
let's
pow
be
15.
Honest. It's
quite.
Rat 7 because fuck knuckle.
Oh, right. It gets a.
Yeah, it gets a.
If you get shot by that gun, it's a good gun.
Yeah.
It's high explosive, which means it's going to kill a lot of basic infantry without too much issue. And it's got a POW... It's base POW 15.
Yeah, POW 10 blast damage.
And it knocks down anything it directly hits. And at rat 7, it can't aim because it can't sacrifice its movement?
Yeah, that's right. That was really high pitch, by the way. But right.
Yeah, but that's my, like, what?
Yeah.
I'm not sure what we're talking about.
The main problem with the blockhouse is
which
that.
Means it's mostly accurate, so when it misses, it's not too bad, but, like, sometimes you're like, I really need to knock this model down.
Yeah.
But the other problem is, like, if they just play better, like,
this
play
is,
around it, it's hard to control.
This is going to be the main problem with structures, and one of the main drawbacks, and also why you see the blockhouse undergo such a massive points discount, because the other great thing is that it's now fucking 10 points, which is cheap as shit.
I can't actually tell because my phone's like, nah, there's no FA or point cost.
Yeah, your FA is effectively a clock symbol and then a blank space, so you have to pay one time unit to do it, and you can take as many of these as you can fit on the table.
Apparently.
All right, great war room bugs. But yeah, the main problem with structures in general in terms of their damage output is that they only get to shoot pretty much what your opponent gives you. And that's assuming, as I said, that they don't screw you with clouds or with I mean, the real fucking silver bullets are stuff like Vlad 2 just wind blasting at Kruger.
That's like all structures, though.
Yeah.
Vlad 2 and Grail just look at them and go, so those really cool guns that are really cool to use, you're never going to use them.
Yeah, it's pretty funny. I mean, even like Kruger 2 has wind blast, windstorm, and several other casters do.
What in Kruger 1, where it's negative plus 3 defense to all?
Yeah, there's a lot of really terrible things that can have the blockhouse. I mean, there's a bunch of forests on the table. Like, Wormwood shows up and goes like, hi, the entire board is now forest. Also, if there is like
and if they use RFP skills, that pretty much removes every benefit that it gives other than the trench.
Yes. There's a lot to dislike about this model.
It does have 30 boxes, which is less than most.
Exactly. It's like it has 30 boxes, which is less than most battle engines.
Why would you ever take two?
Well, I don't know about two, but I can see taking one. And
sure.
I think the main problem is the blockhouse has to be, like, first of all, the fact that its gun is AoE is important, because I did just say one of the main problems with structures is that you're going to shoot what you're allowed to shoot. But because you've got an AoE gun, you can drift, and that's important, because they can't do what, like, I fucking love doing against the Menoth Church, which is parking a tiny bit outside of their threat range, and then next turn just going all in and then wind-blasting the church, or then using some other trick to shut it down.
One thing that Signor has, which you don't see a lot anymore, that this faction, that Menoth doesn't have in the case of structures, is TK, which means it's a lot. They do have some control over what gets played with, and with an AoE knockdown gun, that gives TK a lot more toys to play with in a way.
I think
so. That's neat. I don't know if it's good, but it is something that helps mitigate its one really big weakness.
I feel we just opened ourselves up to get roasted by literally every Sigma loyalist.
I don't care.
Yeah, I really don't care either. There's Sigma players.
I know that no one plays Haley too. I'm just saying, like, it might be like the one thing that kind of that they have. Well, they also have Snipe, but I mean, it just feels like it's like the worst option for Snipe. It just feels like the combination of TK and an AoE 4 knockdown gun.
You might just snipe a Hurricane, right? Like, I mean,
yeah, but it's an AoE, which means you can knock down multiple targets.
Yeah.
And so it means you can move the thing you want to shoot, turn it around, and place it in a way that you're going to knock down possibly more than one target. Which is, I mean, again, something your opponent can play around, but the longer the game goes on, the messier it gets, the more you can kind of perfect the skill.
Yeah.
I don't think it's good. I think it's just like something that Signar can do that a lot of the other two factions will have more trouble with. I mean, the other structure belongs to Circle that we haven't spoken about.
Yeah.
And it works with like Kruger 2. So there is TK in that
which
case.
Which I think is actually going to be the main problem with the blockhouse. So moving on, because I don't really.
Are we going to stick with structures or do you want to go on to
we'll go by faction.
We're going to go with the thing that's broken as fuck still.
Well, just one set moment. So the main problem with the blockhouse to me is that unlike, as you said, the Circle structure, it doesn't really synergize with any of the main, like, the list. It is stuck in Trencher theme, which is a problem, because you can't have, like, Alistair Kane...
Again,
Kane 1 go and give this guy fire for effect, at which point the gun is now, like, incredibly ferocious, right?
So, again, that aspect of the Trencher blockhouse feels like it's more of an aspect of being an early, early structure and an early, early theme force during early, early CID.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Now, if it was probably done in a CID for now, it would probably be put into more themes. It'd probably be in Gun Mage. It'd probably be in Storm.
They'd just stick some lightning rods on it and maybe a couple of extra banners, and it'd be like a Storm.
You wouldn't even have to do that. You could just literally say, I mean, it's a fucking Trencher blockhouse.
Yeah.
You're going to find them on battlefields around Signar, no matter what theme force you're in.
It's
because
like,
they're probably everywhere.
The Storm Division rolls in and they're like, oh wait, we can't fight here because there's a bunch of bunkers here. We need to get rid of the bunkers first so then we can roll in. Yeah,
so honestly, one of the easiest things to help with the blockhouse is put it in more themes and put it in and allow it to reinforce units.
Yeah.
So pretty much like the same thing that all of the other models that bring models back pretty much are not typed as fiercely as the blockhouse. I feel if the blockhouse got that change, it makes it a little more interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's enough by itself. Actually, I know it's not enough by itself, But I feel like that is a symptom of early, early CID, where PP was still hanging on to a lot of the rules and designs they had chosen to move forward with in Mark III that we now start to see rolling back as they kind of become more comfortable with the way the game is being balanced.
Yeah, and as they're doing more of it. But this seems like a common complaint regarding Sigmar in any case.
That's because it's what happens when you're always the first.
Yeah.
You always get the cool new thing, but it's probably not as cool as the thing that it will be later, because it's the earliest iteration. It means it's probably broken as fuck, or the worst possible version.
Well, speaking of something that's still broken as fuck, I don't really want to talk about the Storm Strider that much, because it's still really good. It's just in... Its main problem, actually... No, that's not quite correct. Its main problem is the Electro-Leap nerf that happened to it.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I don't give a shit. Like, you can complain that, oh, that nerf ruined a whole bunch of interactivity and all that, and I'll be honest.
There was a lot of things about Electro-Leaps I just did not find was fun.
Yeah.
And it made playing around the concept of them incredibly hard. Like, you could play a perfect positioning game,
and then somebody could
just run in something and just ruin everything, and it was just kind of dickish.
The double BM of the fact that whatever they were shooting stayed alive, so there wasn't even a chance that you'd kill it. I do think, however, that Storm Division probably needs some models that aren't electrical immune, that are controlled, that you can bounce lightning off of. That would actually be interesting.
So it's kind of like
more like an arc node thing. Like, in addition, instead of just like every model basically is now an arc node, you have specific storm, like maybe it's just Stormsmiths. Like, Stormsmiths get a rule, Stormsmiths, Stormcallers, that is. Get a rule that if they get shot by lightning, lightning does bounce off of them.
Because they can specifically direct it as a model with that ability.
Like, they have giant lightning rods. They could just point it forward while the storm thing just shoots them back. Anyway, that's the main thing. Like, the Storm Strider itself is still a really fucking good model.
It still has the ability to generate tokens, which we now have seen on the Trident, which we'll talk about later.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that ability is still broken. All you have to do is move, and you get tokens.
I like the Trident as well. It doesn't have anything else to spend its focus on, so it just, like, shivel shit.
That's true, but the Trident has enough shots where it makes up for the lack of having to spend it on other abilities.
Yeah.
Still, Disrupt is still annoying as fuck.
Yeah.
It's speed 5, so it's fast. And it has that wonderful rule that annoys me still, which is super conduction, which at least forces it to move somewhat forward, but still, like, instead of being range 14, it's range 10, and then goes up to rat fucking 8.
Yep. It does a lot. Yeah, like...
It's a good model. It really is.
It's a good dog.
It's one of the things that keeps Sigmar actually playable.
It keeps Storm Division playable. I think Heavy Metal has more structural problems, but again, Heavy Metal's problem isn't that the Storm Strider
Its problem is that it's a Jack theme.
Yeah, it's a Jack theme with no real scenario play.
The only way to play a Jack or Beast theme in the game right now is for them to have a very specific method of playing into the current scenario, which is not really great for them, because most Jack themes don't want you to take units in solos, which means it's very hard to score on scenarios.
A couple of Jack themes do get free solos, and all free really sticky models, like you look at
Dark
Menagerie with its Gremlin Swarms.
That's the best example. Yeah. It's because they get models specifically for that type of gameplay.
I mean, for what it's worth, Prime Materia in Crucible Guard, it gets its free Alchemist. Those guys are AD,
That gets units, but we need to see kind of more of that in more of these themes to make them more... Like, that's also why I like the Malady Man being put into Dark Menagerie, because it actually brings another unit into that theme. So you can take free Gremlin Swarms, free Malady Mans, and then you have free scoring. You have now free scoring models.
Don't remember the Malady Man himself is free. But...
No, he was.
Oh, he was?
Yeah, you could take him in, you can take him in and you can get him free.
That seems...
I think so. No, maybe I'm wrong. It doesn't matter. You can still bring him in the theme. And that's still a two-man thing, and one of them has cover. So he's pretty survivable to put in a zone.
The Malady Man is also a recursive scenario piece, which was the third topic we were going to talk about tonight, but I don't know if we'll do that. But yeah, it really helps having a recursive... Models like Alexia and like the Malady Man with his monkey are just fucking amazing.
Well, that's one of the things we've talked about before, is you just take like... Alexia 2 or Alexia 1 in a list that just has too many jacks or too many infantry, and then suddenly you providing your own solos.
Yeah.
Which is really useful. I think that's how we play the Winter Guard theme. The Winter Guard theme has, like, a couple solos.
It has but one. It has actually one.
It has Joe.
And it has the artillery captain, who really is shit.
You take the artillery captain?
I took him when I wasn't allowed to take Alexia at 2 years ago WTC. And guess what? That was not the WTC I won. The WTC I won had Alexia in it.
Yes, because Alexia just makes free models. Anyway, we're not talking about that now.
No, we're now talking about the Shrine of the Lawgiver, which is...
Okay, so we're going on to Menoth?
Yeah, Menoth. The Lawgiver Shrine is an example of CID in moving forward, because about a year roughly after the Blockhouse came out, actually more like, I don't know, 6 or 7, like 9 months, I'll say, you have this thing come out, which pretty much fixes all of its problems. So remember when I said that meekness to clouds randomly? Well, it ignores that.
Because it has true sight, so it ignores stealth and clouds.
It's now in basically every theme in Menoth. Okay, that's also fixes that particular gripe.
Oh, so this one also has another ability that the Blockhouse had a problem with. Magic. And it has a magical weapon, which the Blockhouse most certainly doesn't. Which in some cases, and in certain points of the meta, which I'm sure will come and go depending on how the game looks... Magic, having magic weapons is huge.
Yeah, exactly.
And to have it innately on a model is pretty useful.
Yeah. And then you've got the fact that the gun itself of this thing is ridiculous. But this is actually a thing to me. So the Shrine of the Lawgiver is effectively a giant church. It's an exemplar model, which I find hilarious, because you can move through this when you have the Bastion Senator.
Well, that's because there's a guy in the back of the church going like, he opens the door and
what's
he's like...
What's the password? And then the guy's got this giant ring. He's like, okay, you can go.
Oh, you're an exemplar. Opens the door, lets him walk out the other end.
Yeah.
But only if you're an exemplar.
Amusingly, the same thing happens, which is with the Blockhouse with, what's his name, Hitch. Like, Hitch is the only gun who remembered to knock on the door probably, and then everyone can charge through the Blockhouse, but... Yeah, it's a funny one there. Now, anyway, the Shrine of the Exemplar... Sorry, the Shrine of the Lawgiver, because it doesn't just make Exemplar, but it does make... it does make the models in maintenance phase, and it does make any kind of model that's small or medium base. Now, this is important because...
So, how it uses... So the Blockhouse doesn't have any method to boost.
Yeah, this one has...
And yes, but we'll get to that. And we talked about the Storm Strider, which was good because one of its things that gets tokens, which you can use to boost when it rolls D3 every time it moves.
Yeah.
This model collects souls.
Yes.
Which is very thematic for this faction, and there's lots of rules in the faction that allow you to move souls to it or from it or whatever. But yes, it's going to use souls, which allows it to boost attack and damage rolls. It can make a model ghostly.
Yeah, which is mostly you can give your Jax Pathfinder, I found, but it's either that or Gravis.
Choose a friendly faction model, make it ghostly.
It's pretty much him, and it's Gravis and Warjax, typically.
Yeah, but that's really good because it gives Menoth and,
and
Pathfinder.
You're not really taking this ability just
ghostly
to give Gravis.
No.
Well, it's super Pathfinder, effectively, because it also works on building. But let's not kid ourselves, something like Hieroclimus Dervish. Although I haven't seen a Hieroclimus list with a Blockhouse in a while.
With the church.
Sorry, Sevi 0's Dervish, that fucking...
So, it can do it to spend one, make a friendly faction model ghostly. So, yeah. Anti-terrain, anti-obstruction, just all kinds of good value there. Gives Strength to Death, which you can use souls to boost attack and damage rolls, which makes the gun much more effective in the long term, because over the course of the game... it's going to be able to provide more against what it can shoot.
Yeah.
And then you have Vault of the Faithful, which is what Chris started talking with, which is the ability to spend souls to bring back small and medium-based models.
Now, this one I want to get into, because this is also an example of how CID sort of changes, because not because of the vault, not because of the shrine, actually because of the extreme gentleman.
We'll talk about it later.
But the fact is, this one brings back in maintenance phase, and one of the reasons this is kind of an issue / unintended bonus is because of the effect this has on vengeance units, like, say, Cinerators. Cinerators are incredibly good with the shrine. A, they're really hard to kill in the first place, which actually can sort of be a detriment, but that seems like such a first world problem to me. The other big thing is that if you bring Cinerators back first, and then you Vengeance, you effectively get free threat extension.
Yeah, so you get a
Command 12, I think, model. Yeah, it's Command 12.
It's Command 12, and they... So it can place the return model completely within Command, within completely within 3 inches of another model in the unit.
Yeah.
As long as it's in command of the unit that it's returned to.
So effectively, get a 3-inch threat extension, and you have a guy come up and punch. It means that the shrine is very, very punishing if you come into the men of army, like you melee into it.
I mean,
because it will hit you very hard on the return.
Thematically, that seems appropriate. You're coming into my land. Coming into holy space, and you're gonna fuck with my guys.
Why you do this? Get the fuck out. Now, this brings me to its gun. Its gun is actually, in my opinion, worse than the blockhouse.
Oh no! There's one more rule.
Mm-hmm.
So we talked about how it collects souls. It collects souls throughout the game.
Yeah.
Just to be safe, in case your opponent's, like, you know, incompetent or really doesn't want to provide you souls or has ways to remove from play from a distance,
yep.
Your church gets to start with 3 from the very beginning. It's always going to have something to do.
It always is. Like, just in case somehow they can RFP everything. I did say something a bit blasphemous, which is I think the blockhouse is a better gun, which obviously seems incredibly stupid comparing the blockhouse's AoE no boosting gun to the church's.
It's only one power less.
It's one power less. It has boosts. It can shoot twice, and if it kills models, it can crevasse them. Yeah, it shoots twice with the soul.
Is it RFP? It is RFP too.
Yeah. Now, the reason it's, quote, worse is because the church cannot, under any circumstance, shoot a target that is within greater than 14 inches unless your opponent gives you that model. Now, I've done that. I definitely remember a game I had against Rosie where I decided to run an eliminate. After carefully putting my entire army out of the church's threat range, I then ran some eliminators forward, and they were very much in the church's range.
So
one got directly hit and blown up, and then the other one thankfully managed to not get hit.
So if you shoot something with the church exactly 14 inches away from it, the gun has somewhere between a 21 and a 22-inch threat range because it's 14 plus a small. Plus, let's say a small. If it's a larger, medium base, God forbid, a huge base, it's even larger range, but it shoots a 6-inch spray out the back of that model.
Yeah, but it only can shoot what you give it, and that can be a problem. It can mean that you can't... Well, it means that a lot of times you can't really depend on the shrine, but in a typical CID move, you also... Like, Menoth... Like, the way they did the CID, the church is designed that it still gets its points back even if it never actually kills a model. Because
it keeps bringing them back,
has a lot of survivability, and also just tells you up front that if you go into it, it will fuck you up.
So I remember playing games into it when Jack was testing it and trying it, and just I had Vlad too, and I would just shut it down every turn. That model still made its value back, just bringing back Cinerators, Exemplar Seneschals, not Seneschals, Exemplar Errants, and Exemplar Knights, and whatever it fucking wanted. Yeah. It always made points because it was still bringing back really annoying models and really annoying places that would then walk 3 inches and hit my shit again.
Yeah, it's very good at, like, it's very good at punishing people. All right. We're going to move on from that, though. I don't really want to talk about the Vessel of Judgment that much because it has changed. You don't really see it. It has changed even less. I believe one of the reasons you don't see it is that it's only in Creator's Might, and one big difference between Battle Engines of the first wave and what I dubbed Battle Engines of the second wave.
Before we go into this, what themes can you take the church in?
Everything. Literally everything.
Okay,
It's basically called out specifically in 3 of the 4 themes, Faithful Masses, Creator's Might, and the Flame Guard theme.
Yeah.
And then because it's an Exemplar model, it obviously just slots right in the Exemplar.
So it's literally called out in everyone that it's not an Exemplar.
Yes.
Cool. Wanted to bring that up because it also means that it will be able to bring back models and all those themes.
Yes.
And it still has its fantastic gun, and it still gives Pathfinders to your jacks, and it still collects souls, and it's still a giant asshole, which means it's a fucking good model to bring in a lot of lists, even with its limitations.
Yeah.
But you can find a reason to put it in a list.
Exactly. Like, I quite like this model for what it's worth in... I think Kraus 2 makes a very strong case for running this thing. Whereas, again, like, the Protectorate, the only list the Vessel of Judgment is adding is in Creator's Might, and I don't think I'd want this model in Creator's Might. Like, this is the Vessel of Judgment from back in Mark II, was always the model where if you killed one of my random hard-hitting weapon masters, I just fucked you up with it, right? Like, and that's just not what happens anymore. So, again, like...
Doors of Judgment.
Doors, doors, doors! And the problem is there's not much to doors anymore. Like, you now have access to exemplar warders in Creator's Might, which is okay. And occasionally you can have, if Sub-Zero actually, for whatever reason, bites the dust, you can have him walk up and punch someone in the face, which means that you can... No, it's not great.
It's not bad.
But its main problem is the where you got access to it, which is going to be a very similar issue, I think, with...
Some of the other ones.
Well, it's a similar issue with the blockhouse, right? The lists that get the Vessel of Judgment, the lists that don't really want it.
Well, the Trencher one doesn't not want it. I actually don't think it's the same problem. I think I agree that part of the reason why you don't see this particular one is because it's in a theme that you don't particularly need it or want it. And some people might play it, and it's not a bad choice. It's just it's not an option in enough places to see it often.
Yeah.
While the Blockhouse, I don't think is even that great in the theme that it exists in.
Yeah, true. And I don't know if putting in another theme would fix it. Maybe if it could recur.
Again, we'd have to... I think it needs more fixing.
That's speculation anyway, yeah. All right, we'll move on to Kador.
Argos.
So the Kador...
Nothing's here. There's nothing worth talking about. What a garbage faction.
I mean, it is a pretty garbage faction.
Let's start with Wintergard, because it was first.
So Kador has a weird problem with its battle engines, in that its battle engines are unlike the other ones they've made, which are, like, now the new ones just in everything. Its ones are very specifically theme types.
So we talked about the Blockhouse earlier, and we're like, oh, man, at least it has, like... 30 boxes, and this one has 10, 20, 38 boxes. And it's a fucking, like, block on wheels with two horses carrying it.
We took our bunker, and then we dragged it around with a pair of horses, and that's okay.
That seems like the Blockhouse should have more boxes.
We spent a lot of time ranting the last time we covered Battle Engines about the fucking terribleness that is the Wintergard Fun Carriage. And I've cooled my opinion a little bit on this because I then used it. And what actually has really gotten me much more interested in it is the appearance of, oh, look at this Sorcerer Zero card. Because now any caster who has a fun carriage also can boundless charge it. And it's one of the best targets in the game to boundless charge. Because the more distance it covers, the more it can do its weird Carmageddon thing. And the more dangerous it can get its guns. Like, it's quite... good at that job.
I still think it needs to get renamed because the name just feels so disingenuous.
To me, right?
It should be called the Brick.
It's the Ram Carriage.
Like. Yeah, sure. That's a better name than the Brick. It is literally it's pretty much just like, through a battlefield.
I do.
And it has some guns that are like, pew pew.
Yeah, it's like a Texas, like, out of control roadster driving in.
But it's definitely not bad. It definitely has place and it can really change up your Wintergard list.
This actually to me is one of the things that Battle Engines do is that they take your predominantly infantry theme and they give you a way of getting a bricky model because almost all the Battle Engines are going to be much more bricky than their infantry counterparts.
And this is one of the brickiest.
This is definitely one of the brickiest, but also doing so while giving you free points, and that's kind of important. Because it means that, like, this definitely, to me, comes to... Like, this is one of the clearest examples, but stuff like, the Trident is a Dawnguard model, and it, you know, hangs out with Dawnguard Sentinels all day, and those guys, like, you know, Dawnguard are pretty tanky, but this is a way of getting some, like, models that don't die to snipers or random other bullshit that single-wing infantry love dying to.
In some cases, it also lets you bring in a jack-like item. A jack-like model into a not jack caster list, but still kind of has the feel
of a Because you might have a caster who doesn't want three jacks, right? But would love a third jack-like model, which is this, right?
But one of the things I've played with this particular model in case is I actually use it like a jack-like model, but I use it with a caster who actually likes bringing jacks. And one of the ways I've actually liked to play it is you take it in a Karchev list. And you do a Karchev Beast Jack Brick, but you take one or two of these and you take a few Winter Guard to get some extra points. And then
and
you have
Sack Pawn to Karchev.
Yes. So you have Sack Pawn targets for Karchev. You have some models that can sit back and shoot and trigger Warpath. And then you have this model, which can range out and do different things across the table while Karchev and his brick move up the table in its own way.
Who also likes having, you know, boundless charge? Karchev and Karchev's battle group. Hey, so, funny, Matt.
I actually really like a tweaked Winter Guard list with Karchev in one of these.
Yeah.
Because this model allows the list to kind of have its still kind of bricky feel to it, but be able to range off on directions away from Karchev and still contribute, but also trigger Warpath because you're bringing more guns,
yeah.
Which is something Karchev always kind of wants to bring, but has a hard time fielding because it always feels kind of bad to bring a jack just for that purpose.
Yeah.
Well, this model, you don't bring for the purpose of a gun, but its gun just is really good at...
Yeah, as randomly triggering Warpath.
For something named the Gun Carriage, it has guns you're just kind of like, yeah, okay, yeah, I mean, these exist. Yeah.
I will say,
also,
the Man of War Chariots, on the other hand, because this is a good segue, the Man of War Chariots are actually, to me, what I want out of Gun Carriages.
But, yeah, so that they are much more appropriate to the name Gun.
Yeah.
So they're Gun Chariots. But there's one more thing I want to mention about the Gun Carriage, which is... Oh, which can be, like, sometimes nothing. It's a nothing rule, and sometimes it's the most amazing rule, and that's Crater.
Yeah.
It actually kind of brings, in some games, some level of board control.
Yeah.
Which is actually kind of interesting.
I still elect to roll disbelief, but...
I'm not saying it's, like, every game, and it might not even be... It's, like, 3 in 10 games, but yeah. Those 3 games, it actually has value.
Yeah, true. I do think it's a bit overvalued as a rule.
Oh, I'm not saying it's valuable as a rule. I'm saying it is a nice thing to have.
Yeah,
it's much better than just being a standard range power...
Power 16.
Yeah, right? But now it's an AoE 4 power 16 range 10 gun that also just leaves a rough terrain marker.
Now, the Man of War Chariots.
Which are fucking amazing.
We both played these at the WTC. And
but different ones.
Different ones, but this was definitely ones we've tested a fair bit, because the Man of War Chariot, first things first, I'll get this out of the way. The Man of War Chariot is not really, is actually kind of like your AD model in Armored Core. That's the first thing. And it's really important, because it actually serves a big purpose there. Like, it's advanced. The model is designed to be advanced moved.
So when they... So when early CID and they talked about this model existing,
yeah.
They said, you're getting a huge based... you're getting a huge based model, and you've seen it. It's probably a chariot-like thing in this theme force. And you were never going to not want to play it in any other list.
Mm.
And at the time, we were still kind of, like, iffy on themes.
Yeah.
We're like, no way. Like, there's still value in not playing themes. Sitting that aside, even if that was true and you could make good lists outside of theme that were practical and useful, which might exist to a degree, but this model lives and dies on advanced move.
There are some arguments, like, this model could randomly be with... I mean, like, definitely I can see the Siege Chariot randomly being in a list with, like, Erusk 2, because Erusk 2, just like, okay, well, you still got incredibly stupid stats, and Fire for Effect is a great spell. But... Yeah, advanced move is a big, big plus for this.
That model going second is 17 inches up the table.
The main reason why this model is so excellent in Armored Core is because if you do go second, it stops your opponents from going right up in your shit. And it provides such a big zone of just like, hey, stay away and just let's be cool here. Because they have to contribute, they have to deal with the fact that this thing is just going to go in, poke, and go out. Or it's going to be like, if you run into my shit, then I'm going to charge, I'm going to shoot, I'm going to smash. And then I have a model that runs, like, basically screens for the rest of the Man of War going in. And that can't be overstated just how effective that is. It's one of the reasons I ended up, like, I put it in originally as a bit of a joke. And then I'm like, actually, this is just the fucking nuts.
So... There's two different battle engines in this case. They both play very different rules. And they're a 1 point difference.
Yes.
And that is not because of the gun, I think, but actually because of the additional rule that the Siege Chariot has. So we'll start with the Assault Chariot, mostly because it's first and it's the one I have experience with. So I'm just going to start with it. So with the Siege Chariot, you got your speed 7, advanced moving... battle engine that can be 17 inches up the table, has a range 10 gun, so it's threading 27 inches up the table at anything. And if it's a D3 plus 1, AoE 4, power 12 with high explosive. So its base power on the gun is not very high because it's not really designed to kill anything but infantry. Mm. It's not there to, like, shoot jacks or shit off the table. It's there to throw AoEs. And that's exactly what you'll do is if someone deploys in the wrong place at the wrong time across from this thing, you're just like, I'm just going to move it 17, so it's 17 inches up the table, yeah. And then I'm just going to lob AoEs at you.
Yeah, well, this is also one of those models where, I mean, if your opponent doesn't respect the assault chariot, then they've got exactly what's coming to it. This also is another advantage of AoEs. The siege chariot can only threaten something within 10 inches of itself. The assault chariot just has no reason not to just throw carpet bombs out there, apart from not wanting to trigger vengeance and random-like effects like that.
And that's become a little more prevalent since this model has started seeing the table, but I still think it sees a lot of value, especially in a lot of lists we're seeing, where even with, like, the Scorn... what's their faces?
The Immortals.
Their armor's 17, which means on 8s, but you're needing 8s to kill, but I think you're throwing enough AoEs out there that it's actually valuable.
The other thing, too, is, like, and, like, this is Kador. Like, the stats may not look impressive, but they have... Kador is one of the best factions for putting random-ass buffs on guns. I mean, you got Vlad, you got Butcher, you got... Any Vlad, actually.
So,
you've got Old Witch to throw Curse of Shadows out. You've got a lot of ways of just getting this thing's gun power to acceptable levels.
And the thing is also decent at removing infantry in melee as well.
Yeah.
Because it's got dual attack, so it means it's going to charge if it gets the option to, because it gives you more distance on the guns. It has line breaker, so all of its impact attacks are 3 dice to hit, so it's making it fairly accurate as well.
Incredibly accurate.
So it's got incredibly accurate impacts as well as incredibly accurate charges because they're both because they're all boosted.
Yeah. And it knocks down on hit, and its horses are, for some reason, power 15 for no reason.
Because they're man-of-war horses, Chris. Right. They have man-of-war armor.
The man-of-war horses were pulling the fucking brick, the gun carriage. This has less horses on it, but alright.
And they have trampling hooves, which means you can make charge attacks.
But, in general, with the chariots, and just wrapping, like, the assault chariot does sort of what it says on the tin. I will say that their gun power is always a lot higher than you think it is, and their survivability is, generally speaking, a lot lower than you think it is.
Yes, they're not actually the most survivable. Being armor 19 is just below that threshold where you want to be armor 20, which makes you much more survivable. They also only sit at 28 boxes, so for a battle engine, they're actually quite low.
They definitely feel like they go down a lot easier than you'd think, but sometimes they don't, and those are pretty hilarious times, I'll be perfectly honest. But
for a man-of-war model, they are much more fragile than you'd think.
You'd think, which is, again, very weird, but their gun power is always a lot higher, and their melee output is actually way higher than people think it is. Like,
but the combination of being able to do that and use their guns makes them incredibly valuable.
Don't also get me wrong, like, if you're using these models, I would 100% recommend using them with a caster who buffs the shooting output, because you want this thing to be respectable when it shoots, not like a bit of an RNG model, which is less of a case, I think, with the Assault Chariot, and more of a case with the next one, which is the
The Assault Chariot, you want buffs that give more value for more attacks, so Hand of Fate is great on it, because you're getting a bunch, you're getting somewhere between 2 and 4 AoE 4 POW 10s, and maybe occasionally a POW 12 that are all Hand of Fated. So that those Immortals that we talked about earlier are much more likely to die now.
Yeah, and they have a real hard time catching this thing. This Siege Chariot...
Because they also have Repo 3, which we didn't mention.
Yeah, well, the gun carriage has as well, for what it's worth, but it helps make
their gun... Cav models,
yeah. It helps make their gun actually quite usable for ring range 10. I guess... Like,
well, that was the big difference, is when it was range 8 and it went to range 10, made the whole...
So
like, it made it go from the meme chariot to the siege chariot.
Also the rat jumping from 5 to 6.
Yeah.
So the siege chariot. Oh, man, this is one of my favorite models in the game. All right, first thing first. That gun is actually just fucking ridiculous. It's effectively, you put a Marauder smite combo smiting on a jack and...
And a range 10 gun.
And a range 10 gun.
So what he means by that is it's range 10 and POW 20, and it slams.
Yeah, and the big one here is that it isn't actually the hit on direct hit, which is the most hilarious part. It's the collateral. The collateral is also 20.
So it's just anything this model touches in this, like, slam is going to explode.
Yeah, so both chariots are sort of typecast against different models. The assault chariot is obviously much better at dealing with light infantry and also light medium-based models. Like, it's actually quite exceptional against Tharn in general. Like, If you have an appropriate caster for it, i.e. one with Hand of Fate or an appropriate buff or Butcher, frankly, Butcher 1 can do it as well.
Oh, that would be disgusting.
It will explode like Ravagers. It will do a very significant job, and obviously it's quite excellent against Blood Trackers. The Siege Chariot is the opposite. The Siege Chariot is really quite crap against
Blood Trackers.
But against heavies, and especially against shit like Slayer Spam, this model is just ace, because this thing is...
You're throwing her around a lot of Power 20 on a very flexible and mobile model.
It usually is quite capable of double-killing models, and it's random because it'll effectively knock one into the other, or like boulder jack into multiple things.
So the crazy thing about this model is, like, you're not just slamming one model and knocking it down. What you're probably doing, if you're able to, is charging a model, impacting another model on that charge attack. So you're knocking down somewhere between 1 to 2 with your melee attacks. Mm-hmm. And then you're slamming a model with the gun because you have dual attack. And that model, if you did it properly, is going to then slam into another model or two, which will knock down more models. So hopefully you're getting somewhere between a value of 1 to, like, potentially more, but let's say 4 in this case. Knockdown.
Yeah. I played a practice game into...
And then you're walking 3 inches away afterwards.
I played we'll get into that one because I'll have the best way to cap this. So I played a practice game to Whaley before the WTC, and he played Slayer Spam, and we kind of wanted to test it out. And he ran all up in my shit in turn one. So turn one, like bottom of one, Vlad actually walks up, puts Hand of Fate on the Siege Chariot, and actually then feats because he gave me enough models that I could get my Demo Core, which had advanced moved forward, enough targets. So what the Siege Chariot does is it charges one of his forward slayers, impacts 2 slayers, the charge target, and one other random one. Cool. It then knocks both down. It does power 15 hits to both. It then does its charge attack roll into the knockdown model and does another power 15, this time boosted roll into it. And then it shoots the model that it was on the side and slams it, bowls it sideways into, like, sideways... And does, like, a power 20, like, a power 20, 46 drop the lowest, and then another power 20, this time with no carapace on it, into someone else. So it's gone in, it's knocked over 3 models, and then puts 2 clouds out to block charges into the Demo Core going in.
Which is the ability we mentioned earlier, but forgot to actually tell you what it was.
I wanted to bring it up here. It then repos 3 inches backwards, and then at this point, I'm like, okay, Artanis activates, he gives... retaliatory strike to the Demo Core, and then he runs and he tags the chariot in its thing, and then the Demo Core then charged through a huge base model.
So by tags them in his thing, yeah. He means he
gets them in chariot. The tactician range.
Yes. He put the chariot in tactician range so all of his models can charge through the model while seeing through it and charge into all those knockdown slayers.
And as a result of this, I think I actually killed one. I get the feeling, actually, I killed one slayer with the chariot when it was probably the charge target. I might have been misremembering whether I shot it sideways or not, but I definitely remember I knocked down at least 3 models. Or it was so fucked up that it got one shot by a Demo Core that's feeded, which is a very unlikely situation. Regardless, what happened was I actually managed to keep my chariot alive because now there was a bunch of feeded retaliatory striking, you know, all the random bullshit and mini-feeded Demo Core in the way. And then the chariot got to bowl 3 models over again. At that point, we just called it because this model pretty much won me the game single-handedly. But one of the reasons why was just... It's a very flexible piece, despite being obviously really tied to that gun. The smoke launchers do need... I would recommend actually taking 2 rings and putting them on the chariot so you remember to use them. They're actually quite an important rule, and it's something the chariot pays for in a fair bit. In general, I'd say Manowar chariots are actually... I said this on another cast. They're basically actually giant Draken. They're like a Draken with a big-ass gun. They sort of fit the same-ish role. Think of this less like a battle engine and more like a gigantic solo. Because that's sort of what it is. However, this one is not like a lot of the other ones we've covered, where they are... This one is very much typed to Manowar theme, as we discussed.
Yeah. It's not one you'd probably want to see much otherwise because of how much it synergizes with that particular list more than others.
Like,
and in a good way, not in the blockhouse way where it's forced into that role, where even if you could take it out of this theme force, you might not want to just because of all the benefits it gives and adds to that list.
Giving tactician to a blockhouse is funny and means that you do other silly things, like have your trench buster charge through a blockhouse and then kill someone who's jamming your lines. And you're like, cool, that's great, Norm. Or having your long gunners hide behind a blockhouse with snipe and then shoot through it. But giving Tactician the Man of War Battle Engine is a very big deal, and also kind of really stupid, but in a good way for the cable player. So I'm going to move on to the Crix Wraith Engine. Wraith Engines are... They're Wraith Engines.
Oh, there's one more thing I need to mention about the battle engines, the chariots.
Yep.
Because it's actually kind of interesting, is they're living models. They're not constructs. So you need to remember that it's both a strength and a weakness depending on what you're playing against.
Yeah.
So models that get extra bonuses or detractions against living models, well, then they'll apply to this particular battle engine. So poison, for example, will mean extra damage against this model.
Yeah.
But rules that affect constructs will not.
I've definitely had a suppressor walk up and rust the battle engine. I'm like, yeah, just don't do that. Like,
that doesn't work.
Take that activation back.
This incredibly armored chariot is not rusted. It's a living model.
It's a living dude. Look at it. It's got three living guys in it.
But I just always found that was a very important distinction, yeah, because it gave its very interesting strengths and weaknesses that you don't see on other battle engines.
Yeah.
Like the one we're about to speak of with the Wraith engine, it has a weird typing for
because it's undead and a construct. I mean, Wraith engines are what they are. They're incorporeal. I do think they've lost a lot because it's now much easier for a lot of factions to gain access to ways to kill a Wraith engine.
But it is one of the earliest battle engines, other than like the Menoth one, that actually makes models.
Yeah, and
because it makes solos, which is actually really interesting.
Yeah,
and that's still
the ability to make machine rates, and machine rates are very good at punching shit. Still, like, it's good, right?
Yeah, it's not a bad model. Mm. And this model makes 2 to 3 melee attacks.
Yeah,
Dark Shroud, which is very useful depending on the situation. Everyone's seen and heard this model. It also works in multiple themes, so that's good. So you actually see it. You see it in Ghost Pirates, and you see it in Banes.
Yeah.
Because it brings value to both those lists.
Yeah. I do think, however,
also a model that doesn't have Pathfinder base because it relies on Incorporeal as its Pathfinder.
It does sometimes screw it over.
Which
yeah.
does mean you can take things like the Troll, the Troll Stone,
yeah,
and turn off Incorporeal, which means that model is then stuck in whatever terrain it happens to be standing in,
yeah,
because it loses its access to Pathfinder.
Yeah, it's weird. I will say, I don't think that people should treat this as a giant gremlin swarm. I think that's a serious mistake. I mean, sometimes that's how you win games, is when you just have your giant gremlin swarm contest the zone, but a lot of games these days, I don't think Crix can win by just having 15 points of do nothing. Like, that's just not, you know. I mean, those kind of
games. It has enough other rules that you shouldn't have to do that.
Yeah, if nothing else, like, you can do that, to be fair. But you should do that, like, while making machine race. Because then...
But then it's not in corp.
No. As in, it actually is still in corp. Because it makes machine rates.
So you just use it as
You just have it like it just go
and
like,
it's providing Dark Shroud.
Because it can just run and go like, hi, I'm a machine wraith, and wiggle its hands around, and then one model that dies, you're like, cool, that's now a machine wraith.
Fair.
Okay.
You also can't take control of this model because that was a tactic back in Mark II. A tactic you almost never saw, but was potentially a bad game experience.
I definitely used that against people. That was pretty fun.
But it was potentially a bad game experience for somebody, so
It also made some weird stuff. Like, if you take control of the machine wraith and the wraith engine, and it kills a model, then you get a machine wraith yourself as like an ex-player. That's one of the reasons why. You'll notice that's actually on any model that can create other models. Like, it's on Despoiler randomly, and you're like, why? And like that's actually why. It's so that they don't have to deal with that particular headache.
Making void spirits that are enemy-friendly models.
Yeah, like if.
But to be fair, you could just say no, you can't make a void spirit. Because where's your model? Where's your model?
Sure.
Where's your void spirit? I'm not giving you my void spirit. Get your own void spirit.
And guess what? How many factions do you own? That's right, Brian. You own like fucking everyone. So you just go like, yeah, wait one moment. You go back to your house and then you go dig through and you're like, bam, void spirit. And you're like,
damn it.
All right. Let's move on to Wraith. We have a model that has not changed and a model that has changed. Well, has come out. So, the AFG, the Archaic Force Generator, this is an old model, and this one is a staple of... I mean, this is kind of how battle engines seem to have changed. This is a good example of how. So the Archantric Force Generator is only in one theme in red. It is in probably their best theme. It's Defenders of Ice, and this model is still very respectable for what it does. But it has almost no scenario pressure presence, and it is super dependent on making its gun do work. Like, I remember we were... So my teammate Jeff had an AFG in his list, and we contemplated going to two, and then that got dropped very quickly because you just can't... Like, this thing is effectively a bit of a step up from a structure. Like, turn one, it runs to gain the same spot that a blockhouse does, and then afterwards it really just wants to be aiming so it can shoot a lot of the time. It doesn't have to, but you kind of do want this thing as accurate as possible. And if it aims, it also gets extra damage, so yeah.
So it was always, for early Mark III and early themes, it was considered like one of Rhett's best tools.
Yeah.
And I can still see value in it, but I definitely see the weaknesses you're mentioning now in the current meta.
Yeah.
But definitely I think the advent of the next one we're going to talk about does get around some of its weaknesses,
yeah,
considering the 2-inch place.
Ah, yes.
But also, I think it also will see more game time, because I think it might be cute with Gareth too. That gun is kind of gross.
There's no might there. It is very cute with Gareth. Like, even just having the threat on table, you're like, yeah, so if you come into me, for everyone who hasn't seen Gareth 2's ability, feat is effectively...
And one day, it might exist in a Vire theme.
That's true, it might. Anyway, yeah, Gareth 2 gives every ranged weapon Black Penny. It also gives them, effectively, defensive strike on guns, as well as...
In his 14-inch controller.
In his 14-inch controller. And an enemy model dies, and you pick one of your guns, and you shoot that guy in the face, or pick a melee attack, which people forget, because that's actually very important.
Well, it essentially gives you defensive strike, right?
On your army, yeah.
Yeah, but... Yeah, it works exactly like defensive strike, except for the fact that you can't trigger multiple per movement.
Yes.
So if a guy moves in to like three guys melee range, you have to pick one.
Yeah, or pick Gary himself, or this thing shooting.
Which I was like, wait, so they're doing this wrong? And then I realized, no, he's just playing Elarir Swordsman.
Yeah.
So he's actually just using their mini feat, and he feat it last turn.
One thing not to forget is its ability to give Rhett Jax extra range on their guns.
Yeah, that's a cute ability.
I don't even think it's cute. It's actually very strong, especially on the...
Depending on the list.
Well, it's strong, especially on Harpies, because Harpies... I'm going to double-check it's the Harpy. Yeah, it's the one with the two-shot gun, because
yeah, that's the
Harpies
Harpy.
Have a problem with them using Thunderbolt to push models out of their shooting range. So they're always... They got two shots, yes, but sometimes they, like, are a victim of their own success.
It's also good on the Siren, because then the Siren's gun is now range 12.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of Jax, especially via Jax, which I feel is quite appropriate, that just really love an extra casual plus 2 inches.
Though I think the Hydra also likes it, because it's like, now my gun's range 16!
Yeah,
or 17, or whatever it is.
Then you're playing a Hydra, and like...
Depending on the list.
I mean, well, yeah.
The one list you really see them in, you can't actually take the battle engine,
yeah,
so you
correct.
Don't see it very much.
Yeah.
But I think the Vire Jax do appreciate it, the ones that you do take.
Yeah.
And the Colossals.
The Colossals kind of do, but the Colossals all got during the CID and buffed to make up for it, so yeah. I'm not 100% sure. Anyway, let's go on to the big daddy of these, the new battle engine, which I think is a good example of how CID has moved forward and the models people make. The Dawnguard Trident. Dawnguard Trident, available in every theme except Mage Hunters.
Fuck off.
Which coincidentally...
I mean, it's a refugee, I guess. It's a Dawnguard. That makes sense. I don't know why it's in the Battle Mage theme, but sure? It's a Dawnguard, so it's not Vire. So
yeah.
Never mind. I guess that's why.
I mean, it doesn't
count.
It's
made by Shael, technically.
It doesn't count towards 3 points is about the only problem there. And, like, that's the only nod to saying, like, I'm not sure why this model is in there.
Okay. So it has three, range 10, POW 13, D3 shots. So it has anywhere between 3 and 9 shots. And I just watched a game where, like, over 7 turns, it reliably rolled 1, 2, 3 shots, 1, 2, 3 shots. So 6 shots every turn.
Yeah.
And then, we remember we talked about that ability that the Storm... whatever it's called, Strider has, where if it moves, the model then gets power tokens.
Yes.
This model has that too, except it has more things it can spend it on, because of course it does. Why wouldn't it need more options when it already can shoot somewhere between 3 and 9 times, and has a POW 16 melee weapon that's a shield, so it's already armor, so it's fucking DEF 12 armor 20 all the time with a shield.
What do you mean DEF 12? This thing is DEF 14.
We're getting there. It's also speed 7. It's speed 7, mat rat 6, DEF 12, arm 18. It's a construct and it has fucking flight. Yes, this model also flies. Okay.
But wait, there's more.
So yes, we've talked about build-up power, which is where it gets its, like, tokens from. And then it has a rule called coordinated movement, which means that because it flies, people can walk and fuck underneath it, so people can move through it all the time. So it has tactician for itself.
This is important. This also works on Jax.
Lovely.
Yeah.
It has dual attacks. So that means it gets to make ranged melee attacks. So it gets to charge 11 inches and then make somewhere between 3 and 9 to get range 10 gunshots. Unless you're playing with Raven, and then they're range 14.
And then it's got Swift Hunter, but we won't get into that yet.
Yeah. So then it has the ability called Psycho Matrix, which allows you to spend those power-up tokens with two abilities. One is Force Shield, which gives it +2 defense and immune to blast damage, which means it's now DEF 14, armor 20 against shooting.
This is actually one of the few models in the game that is Judicator proof. And one of the reasons why is this Force Shield ability, because it stops the rockets from randomly doing extra damage to you, and more importantly means that they're probably not hitting you in the first
place.
There's,
and if you take Disco with it, then it's already, and then it's armor 22 as well.
Yeah, but you probably don't even need it at that point. You're DEF 14 already.
And so then it's the other ability, which is, fuck, it has Slipstream.
Yes.
It has Slipstream as a, like, just, I'm going to spend a token, and now I get to move a model 2 inches. Place it. You get to place it 2 inches. So now we talked about that battle engine earlier, the one that doesn't like moving. Well, you can take these in the same theme course.
No, it doesn't work on that. Choose one non-huge-friendly model.
Boring.
Dark okay. Guns.
Doesn't matter.
Fun. But yes, you, instead of doing it...
You know how many people are going to get really angry when we said that earlier? To be like 10 minutes later, we'll be like, oh, sorry, we made a mistake.
Yeah.
And all that anger will just kind of dissipate and go, fucking idiots don't know what the fuck.
That implies that they listened longer and they didn't immediately go on the forums and post that we're idiots.
So yes.
The important thing for me, Telekinetic Wave's best target by far is the target in the Dawnguard theme, which is now accessible to every caster in the Dawnguard theme, which is Oliver Imperatus.
Imperatus.
Oh my goodness. Imperatus with this fucking rule is just, it's really gross. Ironically, Gary too also appreciates this, because if he wants to aim...
No, because I think placing doesn't get around it.
No. As in, like, you can place him before he activates.
Sure.
And then he can activate
aim. I think you need to be careful, because I think that rule is actually very well worded.
No. What will happen is you can't have him bullseye. You can have him bullseye shoot, and if he gets moved afterwards,
okay,
then he loses it. But you can place him before he activates.
Sure.
And that works.
Okay.
Because I remember checking this just to make sure. Look, the Trident is...
So it has more rules. We're not done with rules.
Fine. It definitely has a rule I forgot, which is, for whatever reason, it has shooting gallery.
Yeah, so we're going to talk about it. Remember how it charges 11 inches?
Yeah.
Well, then it smites the model that it charged, because it's got a D6 slam on its fucking melee attack on top of everything else. And then it can shoot at +2 rat to any model within 5 inches of it, which is probably the model it just slammed. So it's going to shoot it, like, D3 plus D3 plus D3 more times.
Which is other innocent bystanding models. So, for all of that ranting, though, there are some problems with this. One of them is that this model is actually really annoying to use. Like, the fact is the guns are all on different arcs, apart from the main gun. So, using this model is actually a pain in the ass for work.
Well, it's a lot of, like, you need a fucking abacus, because you're like, okay, this one... So the right side has 3 shots, the left side has 2 shots, and the middle one has 3 shots. Now, I have to remember which guns I've used to shoot which times on this many times before I run out. You need to remember how many power tokens you've used.
Yes.
And did you use... And then you need to calculate those, because you can use those to boost attack and damage rolls. Because of course you can.
Yeah.
And then you have to remember, do you need to move a model with TK at some point with this ability? Yeah. Or then you better save a power token. So you're literally rolling a whole bunch of dice constantly with this model and trying to keep track of what thing
which
has what.
Which brings me to its... biggest problem. To me, the Dawnguard, for all the shit talk we just had, the Dawnguard's thing has far too... Like, if this thing could generate 30 power tokens somehow, then this model would be the most fucking ridiculous model in the game. But it can't. It generates D3, and it very, very quickly uses them up.
Yeah.
Its ability to do work is a lot less than it seems up front. It does have literally every rule it could possibly have, but a lot of times, what you're counting on is it to have 2 power tokens by turn 2, and using those power tokens to slipstream Model X forward.
I'm sorry, Chris. The last game I watched it, it literally rolled 3 tokens every turn, except for the first turn.
Yeah, okay. Well, that was... yeah, okay. Well, it was probably a good Rhett player playing it then, right? Look, come on. It was probably Tomo. He's a good Rhett player. Okay, then, yeah, whoops.
Jeez, empathy much, Chris?
No, they're Rhett players. They don't get empathy.
Okay.
But yeah, like, it's like if you need it to use 4 shields to survive, like, say, Judicators and stuff, then it's going to have problems, like, keeping up with it. It's...
I would agree.
Yeah.
Except we're also talking about the faction that has, I add additional die to your attack or damage rolls, or both, for feats.
Yeah.
So you have Raven. So let's talk about Raven with this thing.
I'm gonna backtrack a bit. So, like, yes, it has... I think as a model itself, it's kind of, like... It is actually limited by its power tokens. But, yes, then we get into, like... Raven, if listeners haven't seen this model, go fucking ballistic with Raven.
So Raven's got good, guys, and with this model, she's fucking fantastic.
Funnily enough, Gary too also loves this model, but I don't think anyone loves the Trident quite as much as Raven, because Raven loves almost every piece of this model.
So this model can potentially move...
So the first things first, 11. It's not even related to the Trident itself. It's the fact that Raven has locomotion. Raven does like taking Imperators from time to time, or insert Murder Jack X. And then giving 5-inch extra threat to models like that with your caster is just really nice. But yeah, then Raven has Snipe on it, she feeds, and this model getting Swift Hunter. And I've seen a game where this thing has moved more...
Okay, let's do the math, Chris. Let's do the math.
Cool.
So let's say...
18, it can move 7, it can then...
No.
Swift Hunter
it can charge, remember?
Sorry, it can move 10 then, it can Swift Hunter a total of 18 inches.
So 28 inches, are you saying it can move?
And then it can repo 3 on top of that.
Oh, so it's 21
inches.
No, 31.
31 inches, yes.
It can move a total of 31 inches over the turn with Raven.
Yeah, that's an amount, like at that point... I mean, obviously, that like the. Actual,
I mean, it's never going to happen, except
actual,
in like the like greatest of all cases. It's like literally living the dream.
Yeah,
it's like up there in amongst the dreams
that
you can live.
That actually is a War Machine achievement in life. If you could somehow make a fucking Trident move 31 inches, then that would be like your War Machine career is you're good. I do like the more beneficial thing though is actually that when you have Swift Hunter with the Trident, you can have it swivel so it can bring the guns it's still got left to go into bear on targets, and that's really powerful because, as I said, it's really annoying with the fact that the guns keep like having to remember which side shot and how. But this is a really good fix. Anyway, like, Raven is, like, a fucking stand-up user of this. Gary likes it because if you want it for damage, it's good for damage.
I think
it's mortality.
Good with Ossian,
it's also,
too.
Yeah, oh, that was the third caster
so,
I was going to get into.
I mean, like, he boosts the damage rolls, but I think this is a model that actually likes having that reroll spell.
Yeah, because he can boost the attack roll
Fortune?
And then reroll. Yeah, Fortune.
Yeah. Well,
he likes Fortune on it. Quicken means that...
Well, no, he doesn't have to, because the model will be Rat 6 base, possibly more, depending on, like, the list. I'm not entirely sure the synergies you can take with it. So, but then even at Rat 6 and you're getting somewhere between, again, I'm going to repeat it, 3 to 9 shots.
Yeah.
Having rerolls is just disgusting because you're going to hit more of those than you were going to before.
Yeah, and then you obviously can
and
just
then they're
boost
all
damage.
You
can also
four
boost
damage.
Like 4 dice. In like both cases, like Raven's case, right, she feeds the attack rolls are boosted. So then the Trident just boosts all the damage rolls it can. And then in Ossian's case, it's the opposite. Like, the attack rolls are rerolled, you boost all the damage rolls.
But you know what you can also do?
Oh, yeah?
So you know how Ossian's problem is that he sometimes just dies after feed turn?
Sure.
So this model can activate at the end of the turnish.
Yeah.
And then it can move to a certain distance where it's just far enough away from Ossian that all of its targets are in his control range, shoot them all dead, and then repo away...
No,
you can't repo away, but you can.
It has to,
okay, so you have to within 2 inches.
You can juke him back.
Yeah, so you can actually move him away or behind it or something.
Yeah.
So you can make him more safe with just this model existing.
Yeah. There's a lot of, like, the Trident is an incredibly powerful model, even without its ability to just randomly murder everything with its guns. So, yeah, there's a lot of ways you can abuse this. Ossian, like, that's one way. As I said, like, I'm a fan of Gary with this thing. I mean, Gary also has a great threat
extender. Gary 2, right?
Gary 2, right, in Road to War. I think he's the only Gary at present, but yeah. It doesn't really use his feet as abusively as the other ones, but does have a ram prowl, which has, for whatever reason, 1-inch reach, so then you can accidentally, if someone comes into you, just, like, knock them over, which is funny. Anyway, Trident, excellent model, but again, the big catch with that model is that it's available in everything.
And except it's sort
of,
one.
Everything except one. And it's actually sort of an example of how they've over the course of CID, broadened the scope of what these kind of battle engines and structures are meant
to be. That one might be too broad, I would make the argument.
I think so. Like, I'm not sure why.
I make sense in Dawnguard, and I can see it in Refugees. Mage Chopper made the forges. Forges, like, seems a little weird.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly. Yeah. Anyway, but all the rep themes have got a little wibbly wobbly in terms of what goes in what, because, I mean, how many lists does does the Hulk hands go in now? Yeah. Like, all of them?
Exactly. All right, All right, let's move on to Convergence.
You mean Tep the Faction.
The Faction is the Tep. The Tep is still, with its very, very broad tallness, holding up the Faction just fine.
Yeah.
I don't really think we need to talk much about the Tep. Like, no matter, like, things come, things go, but this thing is still just incredibly good at its job.
It's incredibly survivable for the most of the lists it exists in. It doesn't need to synergize with a lot of lists because of how powerful it is. It's on its own, it's modular enough where it can adapt to most situations.
There will come a day where there is going to be a caster who does synergize with the Tep very well in the same way that, say, Raven synergizes with a Hyperion, and it's going to be a very bad day for everyone.
You mean the...
with a Raven synergizes
with the Dawnmower.
With a Dawnmower. Yeah, that will happen
the
one
John
day.
Deere Dawnmower.
When that day happens, well, you know, we're probably quitting this game. But
anyway,
it's going to be a bad.
I do feel bad that we're not going to go and give this, like, this battle engine enough love, but I feel like of all the battle engines, it's changed very little from its, like, earliest state. Even in Mark II, it wasn't that different from what it is
very,
now.
Very, it was, I think, the
Convergence as a faction hasn't changed much from the beginning of this game, from the beginning of Mark III, so its role hasn't changed much. If you would like us to go into more details, I apologize. I don't think we're going to spend much more time on it.
I think one day we'll do a Convergence cast, but today is not that day. And
But the Tep is really good. If you don't know what the Tep does, you should take some time to sit down and read its card, because it's incredibly modular. It can adjust how many dice it's rolling on its and how many sprays it's using based on how many of its servitors it has around it. And it can then sack onto those servitors, which makes shooting it from a distance very difficult.
Yeah.
It is a very, very powerful and adaptable model that you need to be aware of if you see it on the table.
Exactly. All right, so next up is the Railus Interceptor for Crucible Guard. This one, I think, is...
This is the one that everyone's like, yeah, Train's the Faction! And then they got the model and they're like, yeah, it's a cool model!
Yeah.
But I wish it did something.
I wish it did more. It's not it did something, it's it did more.
Can be brutal. It can be brutal. I've accidentally won games because of this model, but it's always on a turn where the casters, like, put in, like, all the effort to help it.
Even just a lot of it. So the thing with the Railus Interceptor is that it's all of its guns are basically, like, three of its four guns are sprays. And its primary other gun is an AoE. So its ranged output is in... But it has no access to intrinsic boosts. So its range output is entirely caster-dependent and target-dependent.
So... It can make...
I played this, and the big thing is, it's kind of all or nothing, and it reminds me a lot of the earlier battle engines and stuff I played with in Kador, where the battle engines, if the battle engine ran into the right targets to shoot, it would just be the bee's knees, and if it didn't, then the battle engine would effectively be a big paperweight, and, like, I remember the first game at CanCon, I played Luke Henry, and he had Zetixus Raiders, and I had... And normally that'd be bad, I'd be rolling 10s to hit Raiders, except I had Sylvestro, and I had... Feated that turn, and then use Transmute, which probably is to your call, right? Like, that's technically pouring in a +4 to hit effective, and that meant that the train went from needing 10s to hit to basically needing 6s with multiple gun sprays. And then that train just went to town, and I killed, oh god, I think that thing must have killed at least 20 Satixes of various shapes and sizes.
That's
but then, the next game, it then died to an Abyssal Gated and then a Cage Ranger.
So yeah, I want to like the train, I've tried to like the train, but as Chris has said, it just some games it feels like it does nothing, and other games it can feel incredibly powerful, but there are other things in the faction that do very similar things that are more reliable, and they might not spike as high, but they don't roll nearly as low as often in terms of value. Not in actual dice rolls, it just, over the course of more games, you feel like you get more valuable from other pieces than you do from the tank.
Yeah. The other main thing is, I think it's mostly, honestly, the thing with the Railless is that the train is a victim of McKay. Like, McKay went through a lot of changes randomly through CID, and because she is herself in a Railless Interceptor, a lot of the changes they put into McKay then filtered down through. Like, the big one is the removal of the crit freeze from the Antimurders, because McKay was using that all the time to murder people. But also stuff like McKay had a veteran leader bonus for Railless Interceptors, and that was gone as well. And that was a big problem, because that meant McKay's, like, role... Like, McKay really doesn't have a reason to take Railless now. Like, she might as well just take a,
It feels like...
more Jax. This like is a Vulcan, for instance.
Yeah. It was a... Of all the things that exist in this game, it's one of the few, like, victims that exist at CID.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't many, and a lot of them have been fixed in time, and this one might get fixed in time, but this and McKay have felt like the biggest victim.
Well, I wouldn't call McKay a victim. But
no, she's fine, but the combination of the two, and I mean, these are a faction identity.
Yeah.
Like, these models are standouts for what people expected of the faction, and it's just a little disappointing how they turned out.
Yeah, they're still very serviceable models, I will say, but I do think they're a little on the lower end. It's nothing like how the Dawnmower is shaping Rhett. Like, the other thing, too, is that the Railless, technically speaking, is either... Like, the Railless costs the same amount as a unit of Stormtroopers, and in a lot of cases, you might just want Stormtroopers. The Railless also overlaps a fair bit with the Vulcan, i.e. they're Colossal.
And that thing is disgusting with all of the same buffs, and it can get additional buffs because it can be...
A Colossal.
It's a Warjack.
Yeah,
it's a Warjack, which means there are buffs that are specific to it. Another way maybe to fix the Railless would to be to make them so they could take some Jack buffs. I don't know. It just feels like that's just like weird wish listing, so I don't want to go down that path. But I feel like they need something.
They need a little bit more, but they're kind of on the cusp. Like,
they're on the cusp. They're like on the edge of being like actually very good.
Yeah.
But the problem is right now they sit at a point where amongst the rest of the faction they don't provide anything different or useful enough. Sometimes it's good just to have that huge base that's separate from being infantry or jacks, and that has value. But as a role, and with the abilities it has, and with the things that you can take in the faction already, it doesn't do anything really differently other than being a huge base battle engine.
Yeah, it kind of sprays more. Like, I mean...
get more.
Yeah.
But it isn't better.
You also don't always need it. There are a lot of nice synergies there. Like, Sylvester is one comes to mind. He obviously has his feet and Explosivo for it. But also, like, his super juice that gives, like, Jax what they crave also works on the battle engine. Yeah. That's kind of nice.
It has good aspects. I'm not arguing. I'm not saying it's bad. It's just not...
Not quite there.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Let's move on to Hordes, Trolls.
I'm going
to,
real quick, we have the
Mercenaries, right. They
This thing has sort of fallen off a bit. Like, I'm not going to get into it that much. Like, the Siege Crawler hasn't really changed, but Mercs have. Like, Ostrom has gone...
It still has a stagger gun.
It has two stagger guns.
Two crit stagger guns.
Yeah.
Which...
And they have siege weapon, but... And then this thing is randomly in Crucible Guard somehow. I don't think it's possible to take it in a theme in Crucible Guard, but there you go.
I guess if you don't play in theme.
Sure. Yes, if you don't play it in theme with your fact that you have access to Magnum Opus. But yeah, the Siege Crawler, there's not much to say. Like, it does its job. When Seer Forge, or whatever we're calling them now, inevitably... Hammerstrike, that's it. Inevitably get their CID, this thing will go through. It only really... Like, it's best with Ostrom, but it's always been best with Ostrom. But everything is best with Ostrom, so it seems about right. It is a staple of Hammerstrike. That's all I've got. Like, one day... Like... They also do fall in and out.
I mean, it has the reoccursion that we've seen in other battle engines, and...
I think one big catch is that this model was really strong when battle engines themselves were all in everyone's business. And they kind of are, but still, but not for the same reasons. Like, this isn't the era of the Stormstrider and you needing an answer to a Stormstrider or a Hurricane. This is more like the era of the Trident. You're needing an answer to the thing the Trident is towing behind it and the fact that it's going to clear the way for the thing towing behind it.
They're becoming less attrition monsters.
Yeah.
And that's not exactly true. Some of them are still fucking disgusting.
Grailus can be an attrition monster. The Tep still is, but yeah.
The Tep is the...
Yeah.
But they're also becoming more and more utility, which means if you don't want them to just be attrition, they can sit back and provide other benefits.
Yeah.
Which means that if this thing crit staggers them, then they have some value outside of just being a gun or a shield or whatever.
This is a lot more ways the game rerolls into it than now, for what it's worth. All right, Hordes.
And people are bringing a lot more shield guards for this kind of stuff.
Yeah, true. And there's a lot of accident shield guards just occur. Anyway, Hordes!
Trolls!
The Hooch Hauler. I have never seen this model on the table, but I do know that it's kind of cool.
It's expensive, and it, like the Battle Engine, like the Crucible Guard one, it's not bad. It just doesn't really fit in the game right now.
That's probably fair. Like, this thing, it has the same problem. It's got 2 spray 10s, right?
Yeah, it's got 2 spray 10, power 12s, auto fire. It's also got the cast bomb, which is range 8, which is a little short. There is snipe in faction, yeah, like on Gunbjorn, but Gunbjorn really doesn't want to play in the list that this one can exist in.
Yeah.
I for sure works in Northkin. But it also might work in...
The Creel? Yeah, Creel Company, I think, can take this.
I think it can.
Oh.
We're checking.
No, yeah, it can, actually. Yeah. You can take it. That's right. That was the old list that someone made. Like, fucking Sea King and four battle engine list, or three battle
engines? Three battle engines. It's 4 huge bases.
Yeah, it was two war wagons and a Hooch Hauler. That's right.
So the Hooch Hauler does have some abilities. Like, being able to spray stuff off with those sprays. Like, its sprays are good.
I think the main problem with the Hooch Hauler is it sort of doesn't really fit.
It also is a tank. It's like, it's also got 36 boxes.
It's very random. Like, the Hooch Hauler existing in Trolls is like... It's kind of...
The beer wagon provides stumbling junk for the army. The problem is stumbling junk on a caster is really annoying for your opponent. Yeah. Because it means that if you hit the caster, it might walk away. It'll never be knocked down. It has tough. On an army-wide scale, stumbling junk seems kind of like a problem because your stuff starts randomly walking around in and out of it, possibly in and out of auras, possibly changing very careful positioning.
Out of command sometimes. Command, like.
So it just feels like it's a little bit dangerous and you're like, it might completely fuck up your plan more often than it might potentially save a model. I don't know. It just feels a little weird.
The Hooch Hauler's actual thing to me is that it was one of the first black anchor models, if I remember right.
Yeah, and you can't. It has to be pushed D3. You have no choice.
Yeah, yeah. You do determine the direction. You determine the facing afterwards.
Yeah,
I remember that.
But that's not my...
Yeah.
I'm just trying to figure... I just wanted to be 100% sure before I continued statement that, yes, it's not optional.
Yeah.
If you have stumbling drops, or if you were within 5 inches of this model... You have to take that 3-inch move if you're hit by an attack.
Yeah, sure. Well, oops. Yeah, and you can end up all over the place.
Veteran Leader's really cute, though.
I think the main problem is that Northkin doesn't want this, and this is a Northkin model. Like, this model would actually probably be good if, like, Trolls had a bunch more fire attacks, because obviously it's got oil on that giant-ass bomb.
Well, I mean, you have fire bombs on the Raiders.
Yeah, but they're not...
Problem is, the model's, like, range 8, which makes it a little more awkward to run around
with. It's like, it's range 8, and the Raiders themselves are also range 8, but there's no tactician, and your army of medium bases are 100% getting in this thing's way.
It also has rear attack, which means it can throw it, like, in any direction.
That's never coming up, I think, but very, very...
Well, I mean, because it has dual attack... It means it can charge whatever it wants and shoot whatever it wants with that cast bomb.
Yeah.
It becomes a lot easier to play around with it. But again, you don't see it a lot on the table because it really just doesn't provide anything you really want to see.
Yeah.
It's cute and it's cool. It's an amazing model. It was super fucking expensive, but
it's
just
gigantic. Yeah. This model. But yeah,
but it's on the table, it just doesn't, like, it has places. People have found places to make it work. I'm not saying it's bad, but like the Railis, it's hard to find a home sometimes.
I think it's a different thing. Like, the Railis is very much, it doesn't actually really have a lot of rules. Like, its only support rule is exhaust fumes. This thing is all support rules for a army that doesn't really want them.
Sure.
Like, most Northkin...
I was more referring to the fact it doesn't fit in a lot of lists. I feel like the Railis sees more lists than this
one.
Well,
the Railis is in every list. You have access to the Railis in every list, and it counts as a free card for them. In this one... like, the Hooch Hauler is only in two lists, and I'm pretty sure it doesn't even count for free shit in Creel Company. I'm going to check that now. Oh, it actually does. But it doesn't also...
much for it. Like, you can take Raiders in Creel Company,
like,
too.
If for some reason there was a unit of troll shooting people who had fire guns, right?
And Raiders.
They weren't Raiders. Important distinction.
Fire trolls?
Yeah, I don't know. The other thing too is that trolls also themselves have just excellent colossals. Like, the gargantuans are some of the best in class, and this thing directly competes for table space.
The Glacier King might be one of my favorite colossals in the game.
The Mountain King itself can do.
Yeah, it'd go a lot better. I haven't spent a lot of time with it in Mark III.
I mean, the Mountain King has like two shots,
and the Sea King's good too.
Yeah, Sea King definitely, now that they made it like not a million points, is good. But yeah, Hooch Hauler, it's a model. It's not one I've seen too much of, but...
It could find a place one day, or it could get tweaked to be fit in more places.
It's definitely
a
functional model.
It's functional. It's not great, and it doesn't really have a home, but it can be made to work, and it has lists that it works in.
Yeah. And then the other one is the War Wagon, which, look, whatever we said about the Kador, like, gun carriage still probably applies to the War Wagon.
Yeah, pretty much. Its gun is a little more utility.
Its gun is better. It has shooting gallery, which is a rule I kind of wish that was on more models, like the K-Dog one. But
yeah, but this one, it was always really inaccurate. So you had this Quake gun that never hit anything.
Mm.
Well, now you're seeing with shooting gallery, it means it can get up there with a 10-inch charge and then shoot something. So if a model's within 15 inches and things work out correctly with placement of enemy models, you can now get this AOE knockdown.
The gun carriage never actually...
It's a 5-inch AOE knockdown.
The gun carriage never actually needed to hit a target, and this thing does. I guess one other big difference is that, unlike... First of all, this is slower than...
It's also got a spray, which means
The spray is the one that really is benefiting from shooting gallery. I actually kind of wish shooting gallery was on the Hooch Hauler, as a side note, because it...
Yeah, isn't. That makes sense.
Anyway...
Well, it can benefit from another Hooch Hauler as veteran leader.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that one. Because it's like, I've only seen this... The Hooch Hauler is only existing in either ones or zeros or twos.
This model also has crushing weight, ton of bricks. It does the same melee capacity as the...
Yeah.
It plays a very similar role.
One big difference, though, is... I mean, one, it is slower than the Kador engine, the Kador battle engine. It's only speed 7. But two... Trolls as a faction do not really have access to boundless charge. If I'm remembering right, I think the only caster is like the sadly nerfed Gristle 1.
But they also do have Hunter's Mark now.
Yeah, but Hunter's Mark is still awkward to use with this thing. Like, it's the usual problem with the thing. First of all, we've got to get Hunter's Mark off there. I know Cole Graham is pretty good at doing that, but, you know, you're still going to get it out there. And then second, you also have to make sure that the Hunter's Mark model is in the juicy spot so you can run over enough people, and that's always possible.
It's a very functional battle engine. It has more places than the Hooch Hauler, but Trolls has never been a battle engine faction.
Yeah, that's actually probably the biggest thing.
Right now, it's much more of a colossal faction if in terms of huge bases.
If anything, you also kind of... It doesn't fit in any list apart from Creel Company, and Creel Company is probably still their worst thing, so there's that.
Okay, on to Circle. So we get to see the only other structure, which happens to not be in War Room, which is what we were looking at in this, but does exist in the card database, so we technically know what the model does.
Yeah, so the... Oh, man. The Well of Orvarus is a model like... I dislike its design in so many ways, but at least they sort of cleaned it up. Like, I really disliked it when it literally could just make any fucking solo casually. That's very bad for in terms of long... Like, that has some big roll-on effects when you make any solo in from now on, right? Like,
they have to look at a solo and go, can it be allowed to just exist in any list forever?
Yeah. Now, they have...
On demand.
They have done a pretty good job of toning that down, but that still just offends a lot of, like, my sensibilities. Still, I'm not a designer. This is really just not my problem. So what I can tell you about the Well of Orboros is... So it effectively is a giant StarCraft pylon. It makes a guy, and that it just gates in a model. That model effectively has to have a...
My life for iron.
My life for iron. Or in this case, like...
My life for Orboros.
Orboros, yes.
My life for the Devourer.
My life for the Devourer, which is 100% what the, like, shaman is saying when she pops out of it. So, the Well can make a model. It is a solo. Has to be a friendly, non-character faction solo. Point cost 5 or less. This is important. It means that you can't bring in the fucking Wolf Rider champions, which was 100% what everyone was
doing.
Is it
non-character?
Yeah, non-character.
Okay, good. So you can't bring in Lord
you
of the
Fallen. You can't bring in extra Lords of the Feast.
Fuck that guy. Fuck that guy so
hard. Oh my god, can you imagine that?
No!
Actually, it's the gun itself, which it has a gun, and the gun I don't really like, but in some games it is kind of hilarious.
Well, it's just a sinkhole, isn't it?
Yeah, and then, but more importantly, it like gives corpses out.
Oh, right. The gun does?
Yeah, the gun does.
What?
Yeah. The Well has a... Like, the thing is, the Well, to me, one of the reasons I dislike it as a model is it has a cool idea, which is that you can gate in a model, and then it just has a whole bunch of random other rules tacked onto it. Like, it has a gun that makes sinkholes, and then it gives the corpses out, and you're like,
Sure.
Okay. And then it also gives Wolds hyper-aggressive, because, you know, you really... It's, you know, because
it's
you
are... angry.
It makes the Wolds angry, and you're like... I guess.
And then it also makes Warlocks in its, like, command range have an additional 2 inches to the control.
You know
area.
What? That actually makes more sense than the other ones.
Sure!
But, like, and then,
but, I mean, that's a lot of different magical abilities all in one place.
And then the other thing, too, is that the Well of Orboros is very clearly to me wanting to be a Celestial Fulcrum, but not being able to do the things a Celestial Fulcrum does because that model already exists. The other funny thing to me is that the Well of Orboros' two most valuable models you can summon with it are the cheapest models. The first one is the Gallows Grove, because sometimes, like, the ability to just get a Gallows Grove out there that's more or less completely uncounterable can sometimes be game-changing. Like, games where you need to get your Rebuke, for instance, let's take E. Kruger, because it's always fucking E. Kruger. E. Kruger just needs access to a Rebuke. Well, congratulations. Anywhere within 8 inches of this fucking Well of Orboros, according to current rules, and it could be 10 from what all we know, well, anywhere within there, you will get a Gallows Grove appearing there, and it can shoot out whatever the fuck it wants. And there's nothing you can do about it, right? Unless you manage to kill the Well of Orboros somehow through Kruger 2. Yeah, like, that's... Very, very strong.
Go, strike off one Marauder.
Yeah, good luck with you. I mean, you'd have to trigger...
That seems super appropriate.
I mean, yeah, it actually is. But you'd also have to trigger Overrun at some point, which...
Well, maybe. I mean, his feat is +4 speed.
True, and you can always just take Sorcerer to 0 now.
Yep.
Anyway, the other model that is incredibly busted to bring out of it is the Humble Warwolf, because that model can jump out, then it can walk 7... Because, you know, it can't run, it doesn't get a second action, but it's okay, because as soon as another Wolf Sworn attacks something, it dogpiles them.
Well, there's only 3-4 Wolf Sworn models that might work with.
One of them is Grail.
Yeah, well, the other three are the...
I mean, it's any Wolf Sworn, which is Reap Hunters, Wolves of Orboros, and...
Is it the character unit?
No.
They're not Wolf Sworn?
Well, actually, they might be. Ooh, our Death Wolves will form. Yeah, they are.
Yeah, so that means it works. So in Tharn, you can use them and Grail to trigger it. And Grail is just really funny.
Yeah, Grail is definitely the funniest one. Regardless, like, this thing is casually in every circle theme, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, but it makes sense. Thematically, it's just a
giant rock, right? But, other non-janky things you can bring out with it, by the way, are the Blood Shaman. The Blood Shaman does not get the ability to be attached to a caster, which, again, is another thing I dislike, because it's a bit of a weird ruling. But you can use Blood Ritual, and Blood Ritual is just a great thing to just have.
Yeah, but it also lets you bring out the Night Witch, which is a model you almost never see just because of the way lists are built right now in Tharn. But to have, like, a random Night Witch just show up on the table just means, like, hey, look, that entire unit of infantry is dead.
Well, it's also like, I need a way to dispel, and then I need to kill your entire unit of infantry. You're like, I can kill two birds with one very big stone.
So this is a very cheap model. It's 10 points base, but it also reduces the point because of whatever model it brings. So it can be somewhere between 4 and 5
points, quote unquote. I mean, I've got the thing. The last ruling actually became 12 points, which I think is better. But yeah, it's still quite cheap, quote unquote. The main problem with the well to me is the well doesn't really fit a lot of lists. Like, it doesn't fit in Devourer's Host at all. That theme already has problems bringing in non-Tharn models. Like, it...
Well, it already brings in the Cauldron.
Yeah.
And the cauldron is more useful in more lists.
Yeah, exactly.
But, and it... A lot of the casters in the game, in the faction, don't really want or need the additional 2 inches. The two exceptions being Kruger 2.
Yes.
And the other one being Cromac 1.
We'll also say Boulder 1, because Boulder 1 appreciates a bigger feet and solid guy range. Sure.
I could appreciate that. But, like, Cromac 1 having a 16-inch bestial is kind of gross.
Yeah, it's pretty gross, yeah.
I'm surprised that spell survived Mark 3.
It's not as crazy as it used to
be. It's not, but the...
It's still a pretty strong spell, yeah. Yeah, the, like, Black Cloud theme can take it... The Black Cloud theme can take it the easiest, but again, like, I don't... Like,
that theme you see so often.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, you'd see it in Champions, I guess, because they need to pretend they have a second theme with whatever trash they're pairing with.
Well, now you can Kruger 2 with it.
It also fits in Bones of Orvarus, which is Bones of Orvarus, which is nice, but again, like, a lot of the stuff you're bringing out of that well, you kind of don't really need. So you're like... Effectively, with Bones of Orvarus, it's a 12-point gallows grove that also guns and shoots stuff. It does work quite well with Bones in general, though, because it appreciates that extra deployment range and some of the other little tricks. But it's not like... It's not really setting the world on fire.
No. It doesn't set the world on fire, but occasionally you'll put it in a list and it'll do something.
Yeah. It's also not technically out yet, even though we know most of the rules. Like, they might randomly go...
Well, we've seen the model now, and it's a lot less of a big rock than I thought it was going to be.
I saw the original...
It's a much smaller rock.
They changed it. They downscaled it. Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons it took so long to get out. Anyway, the next one, Celestial Fulcrum. As I said, like, the Fulcrum to me is kind of what the well wants to be, but can't be, because this model is quite old, but, you know, quite cool. The Fulcrum does a lot of things. It's weirdly being phased out of a lot of Bones of Orvarus lists, because I think some of them just want, like, more heavies, but it still just takes fury from walls and then returns it to your opponent in the form of gunshots and sprays and a lot of things that Circle themselves generally don't have access to, and for that reason, it's just really, really quite cool. Its gun power is probably a lot less these days in this era than it used to be, but hey, it still does its thing.
It does some cool things. It can be used as a Fury Bank for the Warcaster.
I mean, that rule just exists so that you can boost damage with it, but yeah, sure.
This model can make range attacks and while in melee. That's cute because it doesn't have any melee attacks. It's Veteran Leader Blackclad.
Yeah.
Which is like Veteran Leader Warlock list.
More or less.
With like the exception of like 3 or something.
All but 3 or 4 Warlocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has immunity to 3 of the 4
elements.
The exclusion being corrosion. It has a gun of each of those elements, so fire, lightning, and
ice.
And they're all different types of attacks. So you have an AoE, you have a spray, and then you have an electroleap gun.
Yep.
So it kind of like does everything. Gives you a little bit of options for just about every possible situation. And
model sees a lot of play with Kruger 2, and for good reason. Kruger 2 protects it on the approach with Windstorm. Kruger himself loves being, you know, Magic 8 casually, because sometimes he really wants to be higher in Magic. And then if it walks up and shoots a bunch of people, Kruger can then use his feet to protect it and rebukes and other random shit. So yeah, good model.
Now on the
it's kind of expensive is about the only problem. And it also only is in Bones.
We're now into Legion. It only has one. It has the Throne of Everblight. That model was seeing a lot of play in 2017.
Yeah.
And I haven't really seen it since.
I mean, Oracles was the list it was in. Oracles got nerfed, and then Primal Terrors came to the forefront. And Primal Terrors does not give, well, can't take this thing. And even if it could, I don't think it would. So there's that.
It has magic spells that it can use. It has circular vision.
It can make a lot of sprays.
Yeah, it can.
A shit ton of sprays.
Yeah,
it can. And spine bursts. But...
And it has range 4 attacks, which is pretty neat.
Yeah.
So it's melee. So it has 4 melee attacks. They're power 16, which is not great, but they do have 4-inch reach.
Yeah.
So that means the model does charge, have a 12-inch threat range base, which is quite good. It also is a 36-box model, so it's quite tanky.
Especially
and it
region.
Has flight. So
yeah.
it's quite mobile, and... There's less rules that remove flight than there are rules that remove...
Pathfinder.
No, I was going to say, there's way more rules. There's, like, only the one thing in the game that was... Oh, there's a few now.
Okay, well...
But flight, there's a few rules, but I was going to say, I was making reference to the...
Incorporeal?
Yeah.
I think the main problem with the throne is that it's only one list.
Yeah. That's as we've seen with a few others, it sometimes just doesn't have a place.
Yeah. All right. And
Scorn.
Oh, yeah, Battle Engines are not just in one theme. Well, here we go.
So the Siege Animator Axe, which is the one we're going to start with because it's first on the list, it's in a couple of the themes, if I remember correctly. It is in...
Winds of Death.
No, it's in all but two themes.
It's Scorn have 4 themes, so that means it's... Oh, no, they have 5.
They have 5. It's not in Disciples of Agony. Because nothing's in Disciples of Agony, and it's not in Exalted, but I'm pretty sure it's in the other.
It's not in Masters of War.
Okay, so it's only in Winds of Death and...
The Imperial War Host.
Yeah. So it's quite good in those. The Siege Animator Axe is still dumb as fuck. That model is Pathfinder Cav model, Def 10, Armor 20, and Speed 8 base, because what the fuck, Speed 8? It has its club tail, which is 2-inch reach, POW 18, straight-up knockdown. It's a POW 15 mount with no special rules. And then it has 2 random spears that allow you to make attacks before you do anything else in the turn, so you can kind of clear your way. And then you've got your gun, which has got volume fire, which is +1 to attack and damage rolls with this weapon against medium bases, and +2 to attack and damage rolls against large bases and huge bases. So this model is just real. It gets more accurate the bigger your model is, which kind of just
makes
sense.
Yeah,
in almost every case.
Yes,
but yeah, that is a rule it has. It can make trample power attacks. It can make charges. It has repo 3. It has dual attacks. So it can make its gunshots and its range attack and its melee attacks on the same turn. And it's cantankerous, which means it can boost its attack and damage rolls in melee with. Rage tokens, I think,
which
and
it
can also make
from,
additional attacks.
Which it gets
them.
From beast handlers casually. Which
well, it takes
like,
it from damage.
I don't think any like the a Scorn.
It's also a living model, so it has the same strengths and weaknesses as the, and it can be medicated by the beast handlers.
Yeah, usually what happens is 3 beast handlers walk up and whip it for 3.
Yeah, so for every damage it receives,
the third one then goes and medicates it. The fourth one rather. Like I don't think anyone. Listening to this cast is not aware of the Siege Animatrix.
It's also got 35 boxes.
Or as it is the turtle. Like
the Derp Turtle?
The Derp Turtle is just like double Derp Turtles have been a staple of Scorn pretty much.
It's pretty much what kept
the faction competitive. And it turns
even
out,
in its dark hours.
Even in the darkest hours, it still had like, you know, Winds of Death
it
double
is,
I don't think it's as important for the faction now, but here's another fascinating thing. So remember we were saying earlier when you have like the Storm Strider and a lot of those other kind of battle lists where you have a battle engine. For instance, Kratos might as well. They're Jack themes. They have access to these battle engines, but they don't really sort of like... They have more intrinsic problems as a result of that. Imperial Warhost, the Scorn equivalent, has not much of that other shit because it is really just well made for this sort of thing.
So it plays a different enough role from your battle group.
Yeah, that you want to take it.
And it plays a similar way that the chariots do in Manowar.
Yes.
Where it provides an advanced flanking, speed, hard-hitting unit to your list that can kind of break away from the brick that the rest of the list exists as.
Exactly.
Because what you usually bring is a beast brick,
yeah.
And then you take one or two of these as flanks.
Yeah.
Or even in your center, but it allows your list to kind of like extend beyond your caster's control range, which is usually the limitation of these type of lists.
Exactly.
The list still has a hard time getting solos and units in, because the only units you can bring are the beast handlers.
The units you kind of want to take in anyway.
Yeah, but they also don't want to be scoring in a lot of cases. And solos, there are very few. You can only take the Morta Surge and one other, I think.
Zadesh. Good old current Zadesh.
And those can be taken as free models, but within the theme force we're talking about, you can also take beasts for free. You can take the Kreia and the Agonizer as free.
I guess you also got Marketh for free. Yeah. He's actually worthwhile taking.
But getting free Agonizers and free Kreias is really hard to give up.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot of points and it's a lot of value in terms of like what they bring.
Well, Makeda 3 is like the current hotness. I can say from experience that Makeda 3 kind of likes having like a total or two, because it's independent from her trick. She doesn't need to, like, she
but it benefits from all the things she does.
It really likes insight, I'll say as much. But it really helps her list a lot because it's an independent giant distraction piece that still also provides you some early threat and a lot of ways to just get shit done.
It's still a faction-defining piece, this model.
Yeah. Now we have the other model, which I think you can talk about even more. The Supreme Guardian.
The Supreme Gentleman.
Yes.
This model works in, like, every theme, except for Disciples of Agony. I'm not even joking.
No.
It works in Masters of War because it's a melee guy. It works in Winds of Death because it has a gun. It works...
sure.
It works in...
Exalted because it's a giant exalted statue.
And it works in the one we talked about that the turtle was just in.
Because they couldn't because be bothered
it's
to
like,
change
no, no,
the rules.
Because it's like, all bring all the huge things. So you take beasts and huge bases. So the only one it doesn't exist in is the Disciples of Agony, and it just doesn't give a flying fuck.
Yeah.
And it's a model that brings value to all of these lists, because it brings so much fucking value. I think we talked about it last week, but we're going to talk about it again, because you know what? It's fucking amazing. So you have this Speed 5... Defense 18, Armor 19 model. It's a model
defense
that's...
Defense 8. Yeah.
Defense 8. It is Mat 7 and Rat 6. So this model is fairly easy to kill in terms of battle engines, but I almost never see the thing die. It's very happy to sit back and just contribute with its range 10, AoE 4, POW 14, magical gun that also sets everything under it on fire. It's not fire type, by the way. It just sets things on fire.
It has eye lasers. That's all I
know. That torch it carries on its back just shoots a giant fireball, apparently.
Okay, well, I'm still subscribing to eye lasers, but
so it has a 15-inch gun threat range, which is not bad.
Yep.
And it has its range 3 POW 18 magical sword, which it can defensive strike with. So if you want to, like, I'm going to go send a model in to kill that thing, it's like, well, I'm going to hit you with a POW 18 Signs importance attack,
because
it also has divine inspiration.
Brian, it's Mat 7. It might miss. You're like, good point. We're going to give it divine inspiration.
Well, wait, do we say it's Mat 7? Because you can also take a car in a lot of the lists that it's available in, which makes it Mat 8.
Yes. This model is well and truly stupid. And also, like, why do you say it's only Power 18? Because you can take the Exalted guy, the Novitiate in a surprising number of lists to make
but
him...
But we're
like,
not done, Chris. Because you're also like... Wait, it's only POW 20? That's not going to kill stuff. So, you know what you can also do? Is if you're against a huge base model, it also gets an additional blind damage. So it becomes a weapon master, because it has siege weapon on its sword.
Yes.
And then, if you want to be super aggressive, because you're like, well, I've killed all the large things in the list, but look at all this infantry. However will I deal with all this infantry? Well, I guess I should use my Mat 8... Signs importance. Thresher attack to kill all of these models within 3 inches of my huge fucking base.
When you're looking at... I like also... It should be noted, infantry should be done in air quotes, because when you think about it...
Oh, I've killed multiple heavies.
It's not even, like, heavies, medium-based infantry. Like, the kind of infantry that are surviving that are Man-O-War shock troopers. With an armor buff.
That happened.
And
I played that game. It's still really good for me.
Yeah, guess what? Because that damage, like, first you can spike, and second, you know, that's just your thresher attack.
And
you can go in with...
Chris, we're not done even. There's more rules, because we haven't even touched on the fact it collects souls. And it doesn't just collect souls. It directs spirits. Which means, in its 10-inch command, any of my models that die... Any model that dies...
Yes.
I get to take any of my souls. You can't have them. Fuck off. It's my souls. And then I get to send it anywhere else I want in my list that also can collect souls, and they can have the soul if I've already got my max at 3.
If Frawley was in, he'd say a Jew joke right now about just how much it gives and doesn't take.
Let's not say what Frawley would say.
What I can say is that this thing is the master of creative soul accounting because of some weird way they decided to do direct spirits. Like, there is an infernal ruling out there, which means that you can sort of break command things. You can have this thing actually take a soul from one end of it and give it to a model that had no business collecting that soul. It was like
at the other end of the table.
At the end of the table.
But because it was in direct spirits range.
Yeah.
But it also prevents any enemy models from collecting any of the souls in my 10 inches.
This is important. It is prevents them collecting their own souls. So a Supreme Guardian standoff is actually kind of funny because none of
a Zal to Supreme Guardian standoff is disgusting because you just have like so much room where no one can have anything.
Souls, yeah.
Because it literally says it denies the enemy souls no matter what the rule, and Direct Spirit says you can't have.
I was really annoyed to discover that when I was playtesting Alexia 2.
So once he has these souls that he's collected for himself or given out by somebody else,
you can just have your own models die to give them the souls.
Yeah, you can put them in stuff and collect them. It doesn't matter how they die.
One beast handler walks up and enrages him, and then the second one murders his friend.
Sometimes you Thresher and you kill a few extra models, but it all ends up working out because, I mean, those souls are going to go somewhere.
Anyway,
there's three ways you can spend them.
Okay,
so we can go into the fact that, like, oh man, we're going to thresh all these models. Well, what happens if I miss something with my Mat 8 Signs Importance attack? Well, Chris, I'm glad you asked. You could just buy more attacks.
I'm not glad because you obviously didn't miss, and then my model survived your guardian. You just fucking pounded.
You're right. I may have toughed it, but you know what? I need to make sure it dies so it's out of my zone.
Yeah.
So what I need to do is buy an attack. Okay, so we've bought attacks, so it can buy even more attacks beyond its thresher.
Listeners, I've never seen Brian this adamant. I've seen him be pretty...
This model is so dumb.
The only thing I've seen him this excited was when he feated with Sylvester with a Vulcan on Prospero. That was about...
That was fun.
But it wasn't as fun. Like, he wasn't even as excited as he is right now.
Okay, so...
truly disgusting.
Chris was about to say the other rule he has, which is also very important, which makes him quite valuable in pretty much any list you put him in, and that's that he has Arcane Vortex.
Yes.
So, which means that any list you take him in, as long as he's able to get some souls from somewhere, which he can, because anywhere within 10 inches, if any of my models die within 10 inches of him, he gets a soul.
Yeah.
Which means he can start just canceling spells within 3 inches of him. Which means a lot of lists suddenly become a lot more spell immune than they were before this lit model was included.
Yeah, and then finally, he has a resurrection mechanic, which I alluded to earlier in the cast. It's Well of Rage. This thing is important. It's actually during activation, and it previously was before maintenance, which meant that you used to do the fucking disgusting thing of you'd have the Guardian go, it'd make 3 new dudes, you'd then find souls from somewhere, usually from your own crappier models dying and then giving their souls up for the greater good, and then it'd go out, and then it'd also beat people to death. So
you can still do that.
It can, well, it can't do that as efficiently, no.
Well, no.
It can't spend souls.
Yeah, you're right. No, it can. Because it can do the Well of Rage at any time during its activation.
Yeah.
So what I've seen happen is you bring back guys somewhere else on the table that are very annoying.
Yeah.
And then you go in and you thresher something. And you're like, oh, there was like 2 or 3 guys in that thresher.
Yeah.
Oh, look, now I'm back to full soul, so I can just keep buying attacks on this heavy.
Yeah. The Supreme Guardian, CID-wise, has... like two or three more rules.
They did make it so that I couldn't vengeance with my models that I bring back anymore.
Yeah, I know. I got into.
I think this is better. But I'd also like to say, like, this model, because of the way it brings models back, you can also make it a crazy scenario piece, which we talked about a little bit last week. And that's the fact that it can bring models back within its 10-inch control, and you can kind of chain models into another guy's control, into another guy's zone quite easily, which makes contesting a lot easier. This model is just valuable pretty much at any list because it brings Arcane Vortex.
It
brings an incredible attrition piece that if someone brings a huge base, which seems very likely, they have to be very careful where this model places it because it's got a base 11-inch threat range.
Yeah.
There isn't much in a lot of the lists that you can take it in that gives it an extension unless it's through a caster. But if you do manage to give it, it's a 13-inch is disgusting.
Mm.
And people forget that, like, it's not the space speed that makes its reach so far. It's the 3 inches,
yes.
Which means that if models start coming in to attack your models, they have to be very careful where they place them, because 3 inches is a lot farther than 2, especially when people are measuring with their eyes. And people tend to put stuff into its...
It can, like, smack over models.
Yeah, with its defensive strike.
Yeah.
And I've seen that model cripple heavies with one attack because of how powerful that attack can be.
Yes. Like,
and so people have to be very careful that where this model is on the table and what they're doing.
Yeah, like, the Guardian has two things going for it. One is that it's a heavy that doesn't require support, and in Scorn this seems like quite a blessing. You don't even have to take a fucking gladiator. This opens up the doorway to a lot of lists that you're seeing now, which have just, like, battle groups which are double Aridus Sentinel, for instance. Or if they're taking battle groups, like, their battle groups are sort of a sideshow to what you can fuel the Guardian up through different means, and that's very, very strong. This thing is a staple in Exalted as such. Like, you can have, like, there's a lot of Exalted lists which are basically just double Aridus Sentinel, 2 Guardians, and then 2 units of Immortals to fuel this guy up and just be bros with. Yeah, you just, like, again, you got a lot of things going there. The second is obviously that it brings arcane, it just brings a lot of random rules to the table.
Like the Trident.
Yeah.
It just has way more rules than it should.
Probably should, yeah.
I would argue that you shouldn't touch it. It's perfectly fine and balanced. I don't think it needs to be touched. I love it. Please, please don't nerf it.
I'd argue that Brian being this happy is not good for the game, and that it should be nerfed for the good of society.
It's such a good-looking model, too, on the table.
It's a
very beautiful
model. Like, this is
model.
A model that...
So I'm glad
it's actually a model
broken.
That Scorn players have been asking for in any capacity since Mark 1, right? Like, this model is just... It's even in the art. There was these, like, the Supreme Guardian was basically... There were 2 Supreme Guardians outside the Scorn capital. And they were like, they were a big part of the art. They're like, oh, I wonder when they're going to be war beasts one day. And they weren't war beasts. They became these battle engines. And yeah, that's like, it was the thing everyone was most excited for lock and load last year. And I think that's still the case. The Guardian, again, has a shit ton of rules. It probably didn't need the +2 strength, frankly. Like, before, I think it was fine. I think the Novitiate actually pushes it a bit over the top because power 18... going to power 20, but with one initial, it mathematically worked out. It wasn't really crippling heavies, but it was doing a pretty decent job, which for your support piece, and I've got to emphasize this, first and foremost, the Guardian is a support piece. Right.
Most games I play, it stays back. It doesn't actually contribute much to the actual fight. It sits back and it lobs AoEs occasionally, and it sits in a place that makes it awkward for you to land your pieces, but it doesn't end up actually doing all the attrition work.
Yes, because it often...
Until late game,
yeah.
Because it wants to sit back, it wants to support the army for as long as possible, which actually fits the fluff. It's literally a model that's supposed to exist to support the house that owns it. It sits there and guards the house. It doesn't do much until, like, literally something comes up that's a threat. And that kind of suits what the list does.
Yes.
So the model literally sits back until literally something threatens you.
And then it's
and
like,
then it gets
okay,
up and
boys.
It's like, well, it's time to get busy.
Time to take out some trash. Anyway, so, if you haven't seen The Guardian, and honestly, that just means that you haven't seen a Scorn player recently be super giddy, then...
Well, I think you should go onto War Machine and Horde's General on Facebook, because Will Hungerford put up a post when he was at LVO, and he just took a bunch of pictures of just all of the Supreme Guardians he saw there, and all of the different paint schemes, and they all look amazing, they're all great. You should definitely have a look if you're curious.
That is actually one thing. Is like, are there a couple of models they've made in the past year or so?
Oh, great. We're not done. There's other factions.
I'm only going to go into the Grim King one because, you know what? I actually don't care enough about minions to give them their, like...
Well, the Sacred Vault used to be important.
No, it's not really. The Death Knell, though.
It's important.
The Death Knell is a Creelstone battle engine.
Yes, it's a Creelstone.
Yeah, like, the thing to me about the Death Knell is that what, especially when, because we obviously were talking a lot about Dreamer last week, the thing to me is that if you can get extra use out of the Death Knell's, the Douche Knell's random fucking rules that it has, this model goes a long way, especially...
Well, its two main rules are armor and pass out corpses.
Yeah.
Everything else is just, like, crazy.
But the fact, like, the real bonus to me is, like, Entropic Force and the...
And Finisher is randomly funny.
Yeah. And it's a lot more survivable due to the Grimkin shenanigans. It's just Kravitz everywhere. Sacrifice is the fucking most annoying thing on this death knell, because I know it doesn't have that many corpses. It's boxes. It's 22. But it is armor 18. It's usually at the back of the
army. It's armor 20. As long as it's got a corpse. And if it's in Dark Menagerie, it always has a corpse.
And if it's not in Dark Menagerie, it probably doesn't.
Well, why are you playing Bump?
Yeah. I mean, even if you're playing Bump, like, half the time, you'll give the Grimkin player a corpse somehow. It's just going to happen.
Well, you also might not be playing with a battle engine because it's not as important.
Yeah, not as important with Bump. But anyway, like, it's getting a corpse and then... Yeah, it's armor 22. You've got Arcana to protect it. Sorry, armor 20. It's got Arcana to protect it. 22 boxes, that's what I was going to say. Death Knell is a bit of a faction staple.
Oh yeah, we didn't talk about any of the Battle Engine casters.
I don't really know if we should.
Yeah, it's already 2 hours.
Yeah, we've spent 2 hours just talking about random Battle Engines and stuff.
I just saw you looking at Baba Yaga, and I was like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And then I was like, wait, there's also Xerxes and Resnik.
And I wanted to talk about the newer ones, and specifically Scar 3, but you know what?
But those casters are all, they are battle engines and they aren't battle engines, so we're just not going to talk about it.
Yeah, they also don't really fit what we were going into, which I think is like how CID has changed.
I don't know if we're going to do that. Have you looked
at... I know. Like, we'll round this up. We'll finish this off right now, I think, because...
I think that can be easily another topic.
Probably. Regardless, I just want to say, like, the way they've sort of merged... Like, I think it started with the Protectorate CID, with the way they did their church, and then it sort of progressed. You can see, like, they're now... The next generation of battle engines
and structures
are much more broad and open in what they do.
They have to be for the kind of role and the points they require.
I think they've decided that they're not doing more things like, say, the manual battle engines, which are very typecast to a list. In part, possibly due to
that might not be true. We haven't seen it since, but I mean, those models are very effective pieces that went through CID. Those are allowed to be like that because they fit in the way they were designed. Yeah. I don't know if we'll see as many because they're very particular to the theme list they exist in.
Well, that's
these ones have been made to be a lot broader since.
Yeah.
But I could easily see where PP's just like, no, this is the design.
Yeah.
This is the X model for the X theme.
Yeah.
And that means that they will build it specifically for that theme, like the battle engines, which means you will get something weird like a POW 20 slam gun, which you would probably never see anywhere else because it's designed specifically to play a certain role in a certain type of list.
Yeah. I don't know if they'll make... I think, though, that I would not be surprised if the next... Any of the battle engines that come out from this point forward, and structures as well, are going to be way more broad. Like, even... Look, put it this way. A year ago, if a model like the Supreme Guardian had come out, there was a very strong chance it would have just been an Exalted-only model and only able to recur immortals.
I believe that's true. I don't even think that, like, if you wanted to tone it down, I don't even think that's a bad way to do it.
Exactly.
There are lists that allow you to take Ancestral Guardians and Hakkar, even outside of the Exalted theme, which means you wouldn't be able to recur stuff, but at least you'd be able to do other stuff, and there's other people that use souls. Like, it still brings enough outside that you don't have to recur in every list.
Exactly. Like, the Guardian just does so many things, and that's another thing, too, is a lot of the new battle engines just do so many things.
Do one thing really powerfully. Like, the Ret one doesn't really do much other than be, like, an attrition piece, except for the fact it brings one really good trick
Slipstream that
all the doctors hate.
Slipstream, yes. It's a very good trick. Yeah, like, we'll have to see how they go. The past two CIDs they've had have been, like,
mercenaries,
and they have been without battle engines, although they have had a fucking amazing Colossal. I know it's really stupid, but I love the Blockader. Like, you've just got
such a dumb name.
You've got to hand it to pirates to make a Colossal with
rocket punch!
With anime rocket fists. It doesn't make any sense, but I love it for that. However, Infernals, I think, will be the next CID. That's just speculation.
That makes sense.
But given the when they released Grimkin CID and given when they released Crucible Guard CID was about March.
Mid to late March. So there's room for possibly another one.
But I would not be surprised if that's the latest one.
Well, it could end up like a Christmas one or something.
And we might see a case where kind of like Crucible Guard, you have this battle engine. The faction is actually no. Every faction, I think, like minor faction,
has a battle engine.
No, not just has battle engine. Has a battle engine. The faction is built around.
Yeah.
The train. I know the train was weakened, but the train was
originally was a huge
part of the Crucible Guard. The Death Knell and the X for Infernals. Who the fuck knows what it'll be.
They might not have one that's ubiquitous, but I feel because it's a mini faction, they tend to add something like a battle engine just for variety type. So we're very likely to see one. So far, we're 3 for 4. That doesn't mean it's a guaranteed 100% for 4 for 4.
Yeah.
But because of the way limited factions exist, and probably due to the fact that model diversity is a good thing in a limited faction, we'll probably see a battle engine of some sort.
Yeah. I mean,
I would say, like, guessing. Yeah. I would probably say it's somewhere between an Exalted Guardian and a.
I'm gonna speculate. I reckon it's gonna be a structure, and I reckon it's gonna be some kind of soul infernal pit thing.
Sure, gonna say it's somewhere between an Exalted, a Supreme Guardian and a Crix one. What's it called?
Wraith Engine.
Yeah, I think it's somewhere between those.
Yeah, maybe
those feel like the most closest thing you'd see to Infernals. But I could also see a structure.
Yeah,
they could get both, but it would be interesting, and it also makes sense. Like, I could easily see it being, like, the soul contraption you were talking about.
Yeah.
Or it could literally be the Old Witch 2 of the faction, where it's literally, like, here is the portal we're using to come in and out of this.
Yeah, like a giant pit where demons pop out.
Or a giant portal hole in the world or whatever.
Yeah.
There's a lot of options. We're now just speculating about a battle engine and or structure that doesn't exist, but...
But if it doesn't... If it does exist...
It's going to be good.
Yeah.
Probably.
Or it's probably good. I mean, can't say no to that. I'd say in closing, this is my, like, final point before we end this cast, because we've gone 2 hours on a topic that I didn't think we'd go that long.
No, I thought it was going to be, like, half the discussion, but I don't think we have enough time to do the other part of what we were going to talk about tonight.
That's okay. The only final thing is that, and I should have brought this up earlier, is that a lot of the battle engines recently have come out from Black Anchor, and I think that's put a fair few people off, which I think also is one of the reasons why the newest wave of battle engines are so ubiquitous. Even just from a capitalist point, it just increases sales numbers if you can put it in one thing.
Over time, though, they've also been getting cheaper.
Yeah.
So the
now that they've been able to justify bigger production runs because they've got more projected things.
But not just... I think it's also they've gotten smarter in how they did it. Like, one of the first ones they did was
the Hoochola.
And it was, like, prohibitively expensive.
Yeah, it was way
and
too...
And it's huge.
Yeah. Like, the first one I think that was actually reasonably priced was the Manowar Chariots, and those things...
You know... Sorry, go ahead.
They were a lot cheaper than the previous examples, which was like Scar on a boat. And I know Scar 3 is good, but she is also insanely expensive because she's on a fucking amazing boat.
So the Hooch Hauler, I think, is 160 American.
Yeah.
It's more. I think it's like 168 American. So it's almost, let's say, 170. The
Guardian
is like 86.
Really? Holy shit.
It's like half the price.
Yeah, okay.
And 86 American is a lot here.
Yeah.
But, like, the Hoochala is super expensive.
I mean, that's like the difference between buying a Bane Blade and buying a Warhound Titan from Forgeworld.
I'll take your word for it. That's all gibberish to me.
Okay.
I mean, I think I know what those models are, but I, like, okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, the Hooch Hauler was super expensive. And I mean, I recently looked at... I didn't even realize because it was so long ago that I bought my Hooch Hauler.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't even think about it. But I recently bought the Supreme Gentleman's. And I was like, looking at the prices, like, holy shit. These are like half the price.
They literally are. You get two Guardians for...
One Hooch Hauler.
You almost get two for the price of one. And on that note, I think we should end this cast.
Yeah.
Anyway, go out and buy your guide.
Well, you didn't get 2-for-1 in terms of topics.
Yes.
Sorry.
Oh, all good. You did get 2-for-1 for podcast hosts, though. And on that note, I think we're out of material. Good night, everyone.